pattern which had a polished metal surface. The man who looked back seemed more void-bringer than man. Face crusted over with blackened blood, hair matted with it, blue eyes wide, jaw clenched. He was sliced with what seemed to be 100 wounds, his padded uniform in tatters.
"You shouldn't do this," Evie said. "Rest. Sleep, Delina. Think about this. Give it a few days."
So tired. "The entire kingdom thinks us weak, Delinar," Sadeus whispered. "We took too long to put this rebellion down. You have never listened to me before, but listen now. You want to prevent this sort of thing from happening again? You must punish them. Every one." "Punish them," Delinar said, the thrill rising again. Pain, anger, humiliation. He pressed his hands against the map table to steady himself. "The soul caster that my brother sent. She can make two things."
"Grain and oil," Taleb said.
"Good. Set her to work."
"More food supplies?"
"No. Oil. As much as we have gemstones for. Oh, and someone take my wife to her tent so she may recover from her unwarranted grief. Everyone else, gather round. In the morning we make Rathalos an example. I promised Tanalon that his widows would weep for what I did here, but that is too merciful for what they've done to me. I intend to so thoroughly ruin this place for 10 generations nobody will dare build here for fear of the spirits who will haunt it. We will make a pyre of this city, and there shall be no weeping for its passing, for none will remain to weep."
76. An Animal. 11 years ago. Delinar agreed to change clothing. He washed his face and arms and let a surgeon look at his wounds. The red mist was still there, coloring his vision. He would not sleep. It wouldn't let him. About an hour after he'd arrived in camp, he trudged back to the command tent, cleaned but not particularly refreshed. The generals had drawn up a new set of battle plans to take the city walls, as instructed by Sadeus. Delinar inspected and made a few changes, but told them to suspend making plans to march down into the city and clear it. He had something else in mind.
"Brightlord,"
a messenger woman said, arriving at the tent. She stepped in.
"An envoy is leaving the city, flying the flag of truce."
"Shoot them dead," Delinar said calmly.
"Sir?"
"Arrows, woman," Delinar said. "Kill anyone who comes out of the city and leave their bodies to rot."
Yes, Brightlord.
The messenger ducked away. Delinar looked up toward Sadeus, who still wore his shard plate, glittering in the sphere light. Sadeus nodded in approval, then gestured to the side. He wanted to speak in private. Delinar left the table. He should hurt more, shouldn't he? Storms. He was so numb he could barely feel anything, aside from that burning within, simmering deep down. He stepped with Sadeus out of the tent.
"I've been able to stall the scribes," Sadeus whispered, "as you ordered. Gavilar doesn't know that you live. His orders from before were to wait and lay siege."
"My return supersedes his distant orders," Delinar said. "The men will know that. Even Gavilar wouldn't disagree."
"Yes, but why keep him ignorant of your arrival?"
The last moon was close to setting. Not long until morning.
"What do you think of my brother, Sadeus?"
"He's exactly what we need," Sadeus said. "Hard enough to lead a war, soft enough to be beloved during peace. He has foresight and wisdom."
"Do you think he could do what needs to be done here?"
Sadeus fell silent.
"No," he finally said. "No. Not now. I wonder if you can, either. This will be more than just death. It will be complete destruction."
"A lesson," Delinar whispered.
"A display. Tanalon's plan was clever, but risky. He knew his chances of winning here depended upon removing you and your shards from the battle." He narrowed his eyes.
You thought those soldiers were mine. You actually believed I'd betray Gavilar.
I worried.
Then know this, Dalinar, Sadeus said, low, his voice like stone grinding stone.
I would cut out my own heart before betraying Gavilar.
I have no interest in being king. It's a job with little praise and even less amusement. I mean for this kingdom to stand for centuries.
Good, Dalinar said.
Honestly, I worried that you would betray him.
I almost did, once. I stopped myself.
Why?
Because, Dalinar said, there has to be someone in this kingdom capable of doing what needs to be done, and it can't be the man sitting on the throne. Continue to hold the scribes back. It will be better if my brother can reasonably disavow what we're about to do.
Something will leak out soon, Sadeus said. Between our two armies, there are too many span reeds. Storming things are getting so cheap, most of the officers can afford to buy a pair to manage their households from a distance.
Dalinar strode back into the tent, Sadeus following. Oathbringer still sat where he'd stuck it into the stones, though an armorer had replaced the gemstone for him. He pulled the blade from the rock.
Time to attack.
Emiram turned from where he stood with the other generals.
Now, Dalinar? At night?
The bonfires on the wall should be enough.
To take the wall fortifications, yes, Emiram said. But, Brightlord, I don't relish fighting down into those vertical streets in the night.
Dalinar shared a look with Sadeus.
Fortunately, you won't have to. Send the word for the men to prepare the oil and flaming brands. We march.
High Marshal Parathom took the orders and began organizing specifics. Dalinar lifted Oathbringer on his shoulder.
Time to bring you home.
In under a half hour, men charged the walls. No shardbearers led this time. Dalinar was too weak and his plate was in shambles. Sadeus never liked exposing himself too early, and Teleb couldn't rush in alone. They did it the mundane way, sending men to be crushed by stones or impaled by arrows as they carried ladders. They broke through eventually, securing a section of the wall in a furious, bloody fight. The thrill was an unsatisfied lump inside Dalinar, but he was wrung out, worn down. So he continued to wait until finally Teleb and Sadeus joined the fight and routed the last of the defenders, sending them down from the walls toward the chasm of the city itself.
I need a squad of elites, Dalinar said softly to a nearby messenger, and my own barrel of oil. Have them meet me inside the walls.
Yes, Brightlord, the young boy said, then ran off.
Dalinar strode across the field, passing fallen men, bloody and dead. They'd died almost in ranks where waves of arrows had struck. He also passed a cluster of corpses in white, where the envoy had been slaughtered earlier. Warmed by the rising sun, he passed through the now open gates of the wall and entered the ring of stone that surrounded the rift. Sadeus met him there, faceplate up, cheeks even redder than normal from exertion.
They fought like Voidbringers, more vicious than last time, I'd say.
They know what is coming, Dalinar said, walking toward the cliff edge.
He stopped halfway there.
We checked it for a trap this time, Sadeus noted.
Dalinar continued forward. The rifters had gotten the better of him twice now. He should have learned the first time. He stopped at the edge of the cliff, looking down at a city built on platforms rising up along the widening sides of the rift of stone. It was little wonder they thought so highly of themselves as to resist. Their city was grand, a monument of human ingenuity and grit.
Burn it, Dalinar said.
Archers gathered with arrows ready to ignite, while other men rolled up barrels of oil and pitch to give extra fuel.
There are thousands of people in there, sir, Teleb said softly from his side. Tens of thousands.
This kingdom must know the price of rebellion. We make a statement today.
Obey or die? Teleb asked.
The same deal I offered you, Teleb. You were smart enough to take it.
And the common people in there? The ones who didn't get a chance to choose a side?
Sadius snorted from nearby. We will prevent more deaths in the future by letting every Bright Lord in this kingdom know the punishment for disobedience.
He took a report from an aide, then stepped up to Dalinar.
You were right about the scouts who turned traitor. We bribed one to turn on the others and will execute the rest. The plan was apparently to separate you from the army, then hopefully kill you. Even if you were simply delayed, the Rift was hoping their lies would prompt your army into a reckless attack without you.
They weren't counting on your swift arrival, Dalinar said.
Or your tenacity.
The soldiers unplugged barrels of oil, then began dropping them down, soaking the upper levels of the city. Flaming brands followed, starting struts and walkways on fire. The very foundations of this city were flammable. Tenelon's soldiers tried to organize a fight back out of the rift, but they'd surrendered the high ground, expecting Dalinar to do as he had before, conquering and controlling. He watched as the fires spread, flamespren rising in them, seeming larger and more angry than normal. He then walked back, leaving a solemn Teleb, to gather his remaining elites. Captain Lord Kadash had 50 for him, along with 2 barrels of oil.
Follow, Dalinar said, walking around the rift on its east side, where the fracture was narrow enough to cross on a short bridge.
Screams below, then cries of pain, calls for mercy. People flooded from buildings, shouting in terror, fleeing on walkways and steps toward the basin below. Many buildings burned, trapping others inside. Dalinar led his squad along the northern rim of the rift until they reached a certain location. His armies waited here to kill any soldiers who tried to break out, but the enemy had concentrated their assault on the other side, then been mostly beaten back. The fires hadn't reached up here yet, though Sadius's archers had killed several dozen civilians who had tried to flee in this direction. For now, the wooden ramp down into the city was clear. Dalinar led his group down one level to a location he remembered so well, the hidden door set into the wall. It was metal now, guarded by a pair of nervous rifter soldiers. Kadash's men shot them down with short bows. That annoyed Dalinar. All of this fighting and nothing with which to feed the thrill. He stepped over one of the corpses, then tried the door, which was no longer hidden. It was still locked tight. Tenelon had decided to go with security instead of secrets this time. Unfortunately for them, Oathbringer had come home. Dalinar easily cut off the steel hinges. He stepped back as the door slammed forward onto the walkway, shaking the wood.
Light those, he said, pointing to the barrels. Roll them down and burn out anyone hiding inside.
The men hurried to obey, and soon the tunnel of rock had fitful black smoke pouring from it. Nobody tried to flee, though he thought he heard cries of pain inside. Dalinar watched as long as he could, until soon the smoke and heat drove him back. The rift behind him was becoming a pit of darkness and fire. Dalinar retreated up the ramp to the stones above. Archers lit the final walkways and ramps behind him. It would be long before people decided to resettle here. High storms were one thing, but there was a more terrible force upon the land, and it carried a shard blade. Those screams. Dalinar passed lines of soldiers who waited along the northern rim in silent horror. Many wouldn't have been with Dalinar and Gavilar during the early years of their conquest, when they'd allowed pillaging and ransacking of cities. And for those who did remember, well, he'd often found an excuse to stop things like this before. He drew his lips to a line and shoved down the thrill. He would not let himself enjoy this. That single sliver of decency he could keep back.
Bright Lord, a soldier said, waving to him. Bright Lord, you must see this!
Just below the cliff here, one tier down into the city, was a beautiful white building, a palace. Farther out along the walkways, a group of people fought to reach the building. The wooden walkways were on fire and preventing their access. Shocked, Dalinar recognized Tenelon the Younger from their encounter earlier.
Trying to get into his home? Dalinar thought.
Figures darkened the building's upper windows, a woman and children.
No,
trying to get to his family.
Tanelon hadn't been hiding in the safe room, after all.
Throw a rope, Dalinar said. Bring Tanelon up here, but shoot down the bodyguards.
The smoke billowing out of the rift was growing thick, lit red by the fires. Dalinar coughed, then stepped back as his men let down a rope to the platform below, a section that wasn't burning. Tanelon hesitated, then took it, letting Dalinar's men haul him up. The bodyguards were sent arrows when they tried to climb up a nearby burning ramp.
Please,
Tanelon said, clothing ashen from the smoke as he was hauled up over the stone rim.
My family, please.
Dalinar could hear them screaming below. He whispered an order, and his elites pushed back the regular Kolin troops from the area, opening up a wide half-circle against the burning rift, where only Dalinar and his closest men were able to observe the captive. Tanelon slumped on the ground.
Please.
I, Dalinar said softly, am an animal.
What?
An animal, Dalinar said, reacts as it is prodded. You whip it, and it becomes savage. With an animal, you can start a tempest. Trouble is, once it's gone feral, you can't just whistle it back to you.
Blackthorn,
Tanelon screamed.
Please, my children!
I made a mistake years ago, Dalinar said. I will not be so foolish again.
And yet, those screams. Dalinar's soldiers seized Tanelon tightly as Dalinar turned from the man and walked back to the pit of fire. Sadeus had just arrived with a company of his own men, but Dalinar ignored them, Oathbringer still held against his shoulder. Smoke stung Dalinar's nose, his eyes watering. He couldn't see across the rift to the rest of his armies, the air warped with heat, colored red. It was like looking into damnation itself. Dalinar released a long breath, suddenly feeling his exhaustion even more deeply.
It is enough, he said, turning to Sadeus. Let the rest of the people of the city escape out of the mouth of the canyon below. We have sent our signal.
What? Sadeus said, hiking over. Dalinar!
A loud series of cracks interrupted him. An entire section of the city nearby collapsed into the flames. The palace and its occupants crashed down with it, a tempest of sparks and splintering wood.
No!
Tanelon shouted.
No!
Dalinar, Sadeus said. I prepared a battalion below with archers per your orders.
My orders?
You said to kill anyone who comes out of the city and leave their bodies to rot. I had men stationed below. They've launched arrows in at the city struts, burned the walkways leading down. This city burns from both directions, from underneath and from above. We can't stop it now.
Wood cracked as more sections of the city collapsed. The thrill surged, and Dalinar pushed it away.
We've gone too far.
Nonsense! Our lesson won't mean much if people can merely walk away.
Sadeus glanced toward Tanelon.
Last loose end is this one. We don't want him getting away again.
He reached for his sword.
I'll do it, Dalinar said.
Though the concept of more death was starting to sicken him, he steeled himself. This was the man who had betrayed him. Dalinar stepped closer. To his credit, Tanelon tried to leap to his feet and fight. Several elites shoved the traitor back down to the ground, though Captain Lord Kadash himself was just standing at the side of the city, looking down at the destruction. Dalinar could feel that heat, so terrible. It mirrored a sense within him. The thrill, incredibly, was not satisfied. Still, it thirsted. It didn't seem it could be satiated. Tanelon collapsed, blubbering.
You should not have betrayed me, Dalinar whispered, raising Oathbringer. At least this time you didn't hide in your hole. I don't know who you let take cover there, but know they are dead. I took care of that with barrels of fire.
Tanelon blinked, then started laughing with a frantic, crazed air.
You don't know? How could you not know? But you killed our messengers. You poor fool. You poor, stupid fool.
Dalinar seized him by the chin, though the man was still held by his soldiers.
What?
She came to us, Tenelon said, to plead. How could you have missed her? Do you track your own family so poorly? The hole you burned. We don't hide there anymore. Everyone knows about it. No, it's a prison.
Ice washed through Dalinar and he grabbed Tenelon by the throat and held, Oathbringer slipping from his fingers. He strangled the man, all the while demanding that he retract what he'd said. Tenelon died with a smile on his lips. Dalinar stepped back, suddenly feeling too weak to stand. Where was the thrill to bolster him?
Go back,
he shouted at his elites.
Search that hole! Go!
He trailed off. Kadash was on his knees, looking woozy, a pile of vomit on the rock before him. Some elites ran to try to do as Dalinar said, but they shied away from the rift. The heat rising from the burning city was incredible. Dalinar roared, standing, pushing toward the flames. However, the fire was too intense. Where he had once seen himself as an unstoppable force, he now had to admit exactly how small he was. Insignificant. Meaningless.
Once it's gone feral, you can't just whistle it back to you.
He fell to his knees and remained there until his soldiers pulled him, limp, away from the heat, and carried him to his camp. 6 hours later, Dalinar stood with hands clasped behind his back, partially to hide how badly they were shaking, and stared at a body on the table covered in a white sheet. Behind him, in the tent, some of his scribes whispered, a sound like swishing swords on the practice field. Taleb's wife, Calame, led the discussion. She thought that Evie must have defected. What else could explain why the burned corpse of a high prince's wife had been found in an enemy safe house? It fit the narrative. Showing uncharacteristic determination, Evie had drugged the guard protecting her. She'd snuck away in the night. The scribes wondered how long Evie had been a traitor, and if she'd helped recruit the group of scouts who had betrayed Dalinar. He stepped forward, resting his fingers on the smooth, too white sheet.
Fool woman.
The scribes didn't know Evie well enough. She hadn't been a traitor. She'd gone to the rift to plead for them to surrender. She'd seen in Dalinar's eyes that he wouldn't spare them. So, almighty helper, she'd gone to do what she could. Dalinar barely had the strength to stand. The thrill had abandoned him, and that left him broken, pained. He pulled back the corner of the sheet. The left side of Evie's face was scorched, nauseating, but the right side had been down toward the stone. It was oddly untouched.
"This is your fault," he thought at her. "How dare you do this, stupid, frustrating woman?"
This was not his fault, not his responsibility.
"Dalinar," Calame said, stepping up, "you should rest."
"She didn't betray us," Dalinar said firmly.
"I'm sure eventually we'll know what..."
"She did not betray us,"
Dalinar snapped.
"Keep the discovery of her body quiet, Calame. Tell the people. Tell them my wife was slain by an assassin last night. I will swear the few elites who know to secrecy. Let everyone think she died a hero, and that the destruction of the city today was done in retribution."
Dalinar set his jaw. Earlier today, the soldiers of his army, so carefully trained over the years to resist pillaging and the slaughter of civilians, had burned a city to the ground. It would ease their consciences to think that first the High Lady had been murdered. Calame smiled at him, a knowing, even self-important smile. His lie would serve a second purpose. As long as Calame and the head scribes thought they knew a secret, they'd be less likely to dig for the true answer.
"Not my fault."
"Rest, Dalinar," Calame said. "You are in pain now, but as the high storm must pass, all mortal agonies will fade. Dalinar left the corpse to the ministrations of others. As he departed, he strangely heard the screams of those people in the rift. He stopped, wondering what it was. Nobody else seemed to notice. Yes, that was distant screaming. In his head, maybe? They all seemed children to his ears, the ones he'd abandoned to the flames. A chorus of the innocent, pleading for help, for mercy. Evie's voice joined them.
Page from Mythica, The Taker of Secrets. Ja Anat, creator and corrupter, unique among the unmade. Creator. Her twisted creations are her beloved children. Her admiration of the spren of our world inspires her. Corrupter. She seeks the children of honor and the children of cultivation. With one touch, she corrupts.
77. Storm Shelter. Something must be done about the remnants of Odium's forces. The Parsh, as they are now called, continue their war with zeal, even without their masters from damnation. From Drawer 3020, First Emerald. Kaladin dashed across the street.
Wait! He shouted. One more here!
Ahead, a man with a thin mustache struggled to close a thick wooden door. It stuck partway open, however, giving just enough time for Kaladin to slip through. The man swore at him, then pulled the door shut. Made of dark stumpweight wood, it made a muffled thunk. The man did up the locks, then stepped back and let three younger men place a thick bar into the settings.
"Cutting that close, armsman," the mustachioed man said, noting the wall guard patch on Kaladin's shoulder.
"Sorry,"
Kaladin said, handing the man a few spheres as a cover charge. "But the storm is still a few minutes away."
"Can't be too careful with this new storm," the man said. "Be glad the door got stuck."
Syl sat on the hinges, legs hanging over the sides. Kaladin doubted it had been luck. Sticking people's shoes to the stone was a classic windspren trick. Still, he did understand the doorman's hesitance. Everstorms didn't quite match up with scholarly projections. The previous one had arrived hours earlier than anyone had guessed it would. Fortunately, they tended to blow in slower than high storms. If you knew to watch the sky, there was time to find shelter. Kaladin ran his hand through his hair and started deeper into the winehouse. This was one of those fashionable places that, while technically a storm shelter, was used only by rich people who had come to spend the storm enjoying themselves. It had a large common room and thick walls of stone blocks. No windows, of course. A bartender kept people liquored near the back, and a number of booths ringed the perimeter. He spotted Shallan and Adolin sitting in a booth at the side. She wore her own face, but Adolin looked like Melaran Kahl, a tall, bald man around Adolin's height. Kaladin lingered, watching Shallan laugh at something Adolin said, then poke him, with her safe hand, in the shoulder. She seemed completely enthralled by him. And good for her. Everyone deserved something to give them light these days. But what about the glances she shot him on occasion? Times when she didn't quite seem to be the same person. A different smile, an almost wicked look to her eyes. "You're seeing things," he thought to himself. He strode forward and caught their attention, settling into the booth with a sigh. He was off duty and free to visit the city. He'd told the others he'd find his own shelter for the storm, and only had to be back in time for evening post-storm patrol.
"Took you long enough, bridge boy,"
Adolin said. "Lost track of time," Kaladin said, tapping the table. He hated being in storm shelters. They felt too much like prisons. Outside, thunder announced the Everstorm's arrival. Most people in the city would be inside their homes, the refugees instead in public storm shelters. This for-pay shelter was sparsely occupied, only a few of the tables or booths in use.
That would give privacy to talk, fortunately, but it didn't bode well for the proprietor. People didn't have spheres to waste.
"Where's Elokar?" Kaladin asked.
"Elokar is working on last-minute plans through the storm," Adolin said. "He's decided to reveal himself tonight to the Light Eyes he's chosen. And he's done a good job, Cal. We'll at least have some troops because of this. Fewer than I'd like, but something."
"And maybe another Night Radiant?" Shallan asked, glancing at Kaladin. "What have you found?" He quickly caught them up on what he'd learned. The Wall Guard might have a soulcaster and was definitely producing food somehow. It had seized emerald stores in the city, a fact he'd recently discovered.
"Azure is tough to read," Kaladin finished. "She visits the barracks every night, but never talks about herself. Men report seeing her sword cut through stone, but it has no gemstone. I think it might be an honor blade, like the weapon of the assassin in white."
"Huh," Adolin said, sitting back. "You know, that would explain a lot."
"My platoon has dinner with her tonight, after evening patrol," Kaladin said. "I intend to see what I can learn."
A serving girl came for orders, and Adolin bought them wine. He knew about light-eyed drinks and, without needing to be told, ordered something without a touch of alcohol for Kaladin. He'd be on duty later. Adolin did get Shallan a cup of violet, to Kaladin's surprise. As the serving girl left with the order, Adolin reached out toward Kaladin.
"Let me see your sword."
"My sword?" Kaladin said, glancing toward Syl, who was huddling near the back of the booth and humming softly to herself, a way of ignoring the sounds of the Everstorm which rumbled beyond the stones.
"Not that sword," Adolin said. "Your side sword."
Kaladin glanced down to where the sword stuck out beside his seat. He'd almost forgotten he was wearing the thing, which was a relief. The first few days, he'd bumped the sheath into everything. He unbuckled it and set it on the table for Adolin.
"Good blade," the prince said. "Well maintained. It was in this condition when they assigned it to you?"
Kaladin nodded. Adolin drew it and held it up. "It's a little small," Shallan noted.
"It's a one-handed sword, Shallan. Close-range infantry weapon. A longer blade would be impractical."
"Longer, like shard blades?" Kaladin asked.
"Well, yes. They break all kinds of rules." Adolin waved the sword through a few motions, then sheathed it. "I like this High Marshal of yours."
"It's not even her weapon," Kaladin said, taking it back. "You boys done comparing your swords?" Shallan asked. "Because I've found something." She thumped a large book onto the table. "One of my contacts finally tracked down a copy of Hesse's Mythica. It's a newer book and has been poorly received. It attributes distinct personalities to the Unmade." Adolin lifted the cover, peeking in.
"So, anything about swords in it?"
"Oh, hush," she said, then batted his arm in a playful and somewhat nauseating way. Yes, it was uncomfortable to watch the two of them. Kaladin liked them both, just not together. He forced himself to look around the room, which was occupied by light eyes trying to drink away the sounds of the storm. He tried not to think of refugees who would be packed into stuffy public shelters, clutching their meager possessions and hoping some of what they were forced to leave behind would survive the storm. "The book," Shallan said, "claims there were 9 unmade. That matches the vision Dalinar saw, though other reports speak of 10 unmade. They're likely ancient Spren, primal, from the days before human society and civilization. The book claims the 9 rampaged during the desolations, but says not all were destroyed at Ahariariam. The author insists that some are active today. I find her vindicated, obviously, by what we've experienced."
"And there's one of these in the city?" Adolin said.
"I think," Shallan said. "I think there might be 2, Adolin. Sia-Anat, the Taker of Secrets, is one. Again, Dalinar's visions mention her. Sia-Anat's touch corrupted other Spren, and we're seeing the effects of that here.
And the other one? Adolin asked.
A shirt, Marn,
Shallan said softly. She slipped a little knife from her satchel and began to absently carve at the top of the table.
The heart of the revel. The book has less to say on him, though it speaks of how he leads people to indulge in excess.
Too unmade, Kaladin said. Are you sure?
Sure as I can be.
Wit confirmed the second, and the way the queen acted leading up to the riots seems an obvious sign. As for the taker of secrets, we can see the corrupted Spren ourselves.
How do we fight two? Kaladin asked. How do we fight one? Adolin said. In the tower we didn't so much fight the thing as frighten it off. Shallan can't even say how she did that. What does the book say about fighting them?
Nothing.
Shallan shrugged, blowing at her little carving on the table. It was of a corrupted glory spren in the shape of a cube, which another patron had attracted. The book says if you see a spren the wrong color, you're supposed to immediately move to another town.
There's kind of an army in the way, Kaladin said.
Yes. Amazingly, your stench hasn't cleared them out yet.
Shallan started leaping through her book. Kaladin frowned. Comments like that were part of what confused him about Shallan. She seemed perfectly friendly one moment, and then she'd snap at him the next, while pretending it was merely part of normal conversation. But she didn't talk like that to others, not even in jest.
What is wrong with you, woman? He thought.
They'd shared something intimate in the chasms back on the shattered plains. A high storm huddled together, and words. Was she embarrassed by that? Was that the reason she snapped at him sometimes? If that was so, how did one explain the other times, when she watched him and grinned, when she winked in a sly way?
Hesse reports stories of the Unmade not only corrupting Spren, but corrupting people,
Shallan was saying.
Maybe that's what's happening with the palace. We'll know more after infiltrating the cult tonight.
I don't like you going alone, Adolin said.
I won't be alone. I'll have my team.
One washwoman and two deserters, Kaladin said. If Gaz is anything to judge by, Shallan, you shouldn't put too much trust in those men. Shallan raised her chin.
At least my soldiers knew when to get away from the war camps, as opposed to just standing around letting people fling arrows at them.
We trust you, Shallan,
Adolin said, eyeing Kaladin as if to say, drop it.
And we really need a look at that oath gate.
What if I can't open it? Shallan asked. What then?
We have to retreat back to the Shattered Plains, Kaladin said.
Elokar won't leave his family.
Then Drahi Skaar and I rush the palace, Kaladin said. We fly in at night, enter through the upper balcony, grab the queen and the young prince. We do it all right before the high storm comes, then the lot of us fly back to Urethiru.
And leave the city to fall, Adolin said, drawing his lips to a line.
Can the city hold? Shallan asked. Maybe until we get back with a real army marched out here?
That would take months, Adolin said. And the wall guard is, what, 4 battalions?
5 in total, Kaladin said. 5,000 men? Shallan asked. So few?
That's large for a city garrison, Adolin said. The point of fortifications is to let a small number hold against a much larger force. But the enemy has an unexpected advantage. Voidbringers who can fly, and a city infested with their allies.
Yeah, Kaladin said. The wall guard is earnest, but they won't be able to withstand a dedicated assault. There are tens of thousands of Parshmen out there, and they're close to attacking. We don't have much time left. The Fused will sweep in to secure portions of the wall, and their armies will follow. If we're going to hold this city, we'll need Radiance and Shardbearers to even the odds.
Kaladin and Shallan shared a look. Their Radiance were not a battle-ready group. Not yet. Storms his men had barely taken to the skies. How could they be expected to fight those creatures who flew so easily upon the winds? How could he protect this city and protect his men? They fell silent, listening to the room shake with the sounds of thunder outside. Kaladin finished his drink, wishing it were one of Rock's concoctions instead, and flicked away an odd kremling that he spotted clinging to the side of the bench. It had a multitude of legs and a bulbous body with a strange tan pattern on its back. Disgusting. Even with the stresses to the city, the proprietor could at least keep this place clean.
Once the storm finally blew itself out, Shallan stepped from the winehouse, holding Adolin's arm. She watched Kaladin hurry off toward the barracks for evening patrol. She should probably be equally eager to get going. She still had to steal some food today, enough to satisfy the cult of moments when she approached them later in the evening. That should be easy enough. Vatha had taken to planning operations under Ishna's guidance and was proving quite proficient. Still, she lingered, enjoying Adolin's presence. She wanted to be here with him before it was time to be Vale. She didn't much care for him. Too clean-cut, too oblivious, too expected. She was fine with him as an ally, but wasn't the least bit interested romantically. Shallan held his arm, walking with him. People already moved through the city, cleaning up, more so they could scavenge than out of civic duty. They reminded her of kremlings that emerged after a storm to feast on the plants. Indeed, nearby, ornamental rock buds spat out vines in clusters beside doorways, a splatter of green vines and unfurling leaves set against the brown city canvas. One patch nearby had been struck and burned away by the Everstorm's red lightning. "I need to show you the Impossible Falls sometime," Adolin said. "If you watch them from the right angles, it looks like the water is flowing down along the tiers, then somehow right up onto the top again." As they walked, she had to step over a dead mink, sticking half out of a broken tree trunk. Not the most romantic of strolls, but it was good to hold on to Adolin's arm, even if he had to wear a false face. "Hey," Adolin said, "I didn't get to look through the sketchbook. You said you were going to show me." "I brought the wrong one, remember? I had to carve on the table." She grinned. "Don't think I missed you going up and paying for the damage when I wasn't looking." He grunted. "People carve on bar tables. It happens all the time."
"Sure. Sure. It was a good carving, too."
"And you still think I shouldn't have done it?" She squeezed his arm. "Oh, Adolin Colin. You are your father's son. I won't do it again, all right?" He was blushing.
"I," he said, "was promised sketches. I don't care if it's the wrong sketchbook. I feel like I haven't seen any of your pictures for ages."
"There's nothing good in this one," she said, digging in her satchel. "I've been distracted lately." He still made her hand it over, and secretly she was pleased. He started flipping through the more recent pictures, and though he noted the ones of strange Spren, he idled most on the sketches of refugees she'd done for her collection. A mother with her daughter, sitting in shadow, but with her face looking toward the horizon and the hints of a rising sun. A thick-knuckled man sweeping the area around his pallet on the street. A young woman, light-eyed and hanging out a window, hair drifting free, wearing only a nightgown, with her hand tied in a pouch.
"Shallan," he said. "These are amazing. Some of the best work you've ever done."
"They're just quick sketches, Adolin."
"They're beautiful," he said, looking at another where he stopped. It was a picture of him in one of his new suits.
Shallan blushed. "Forgot that was there," she said, trying to get the sketchbook back. He lingered on the picture, then finally succumbed to her prodding and handed it back. She let out a sigh of relief. It wasn't that she'd be embarrassed if he saw the sketch of Kaladin on the next page. She did sketches of all kinds of people. But best to end on the picture of Adolin. veil had been seeping through on that other one. You're getting better, if that's possible. Maybe. Though I don't know how much I can credit myself with the progress. Words of Radiance says that a lot of Lightweavers were artists. So the Order recruited people like you. Or the Surge Binding made them better at sketching, giving them an unfair advantage over other artists. I have an unfair advantage over other duelists. I have had the finest training since childhood. I was born strong and healthy, and my father's wealth gave me some of the best sparring partners in the world. My build gives me reach over other men. Does that mean I don't deserve accolades when I win? You don't have supernatural help. You still had to work hard. I know you did. He put his arm around her, pulling her closer as they walked. Other Alethi couples kept their distance in public, but Adolin had been raised by a mother with a fondness for hugs. You know, there's this thing my father complains about. He asked what the use of shard blades was. I think they're pretty obviously for cutting people up. Without cutting them, actually. So, but why only swords? Father asks why the ancient Radiance never made tools for the people. He squeezed her shoulder. I love that your powers make you a better artist, Shallan. Father was wrong. The Radiance weren't just soldiers. Yes, they created incredible weapons, but they also created incredible art. And maybe, once this war is done, we can find other uses for their powers. Storms, his enthusiasm could be intoxicating. As they walked toward the tailor's shop, she was loath to part with him, though Vale did need to get on with her day's work. I can be anyone, Shallan thought, noticing a few joyspren blowing past, like a swirl of blue leaves. I can become anything. Adolin deserved someone far better than her. Could she become that someone? Craft for him the perfect bride? A woman that looked and acted as befitted Adolin Colin? It wouldn't be her. The real her was a bruised and sorry thing, painted up all pretty but inside a horrid mess. She already put a face over that for him. Why not go a few steps farther? Radiant. Radiant could be his perfect bride, and she did like him. The thought made Shallan feel cold inside. Once they were close enough to the tailor's shop that she didn't worry about him being safe as he walked back on his own, Shallan forced herself to pull out of his grip. She held his hand a moment with her free hand. I need to be going. You aren't to meet the cult until sunset. I need to steal some food first to pay them. Still, he held to her hand. What do you do out there, Shallan? Who do you become? Everyone, she said. Then she reached up and kissed him on the cheek. Thank you for being you, Adolin.
Everyone else was taken already, he mumbled.
Never stopped me. He watched her until she ducked around a corner. Heart thumping. Adolin Colin in her life was like a warm sunrise. Vale started to seep out, and she was forced to acknowledge that sometimes she preferred the storm and the rain to the sun. She checked at the drop point, inside a corner of a building that was now rubble. Here, Red had deposited a pack that contained Vale's outfit. She grabbed it and went hunting a good place to change. The end of the world had come, but that seemed most true after a storm. Refuse strewn about. People who hadn't gotten to shelters moaning from fallen shacks or alongside streets. It was like each storm tried to wipe them off Roshar, and they only remained through sheer grit and luck. Now with two storms it was even worse. If they defeated the Voidbringers, would the Everstorm remain? Had it begun to erode their society in a way that, win the war or not, would eventually end with them all swept out to sea? She felt her face changing as she walked, draining stormlight from her satchel. It rose in her like a flaring flame, before dimming to an ember as she became the people from the sketches Adolin had seen. The poor man, who tried doggedly to keep the area around his little palette clean, as if to try to maintain some control over an insane world. The light-eyed girl who wondered what had happened to the joy of adolescence. Instead of her wearing her first hava to a ball, her family was forced to take in dozens of relatives from neighboring towns, and she spent the days locked away because the streets weren't safe. The mother with a child, sitting in darkness, looking toward the horizon and a hidden sun. Face after face, life after life, overpowering, intoxicating, alive, breathing and crying and laughing and being. So many hopes, so many lives, so many dreams. She unbuttoned her hava up the side, then let it fall. She dropped her satchel, which thumped from the heavy book inside. She stepped forward in only her shift, safe hand uncovered, feeling the wind on her skin. She was still wearing an illusion, one that didn't disrobe, so nobody could see her. Nobody could see her. Had anyone ever seen her? She stopped on the street corner, wearing shifting faces and clothing, enjoying the sensation of freedom, clothed yet naked skin shivering at the wind's kiss. Around her, people ducked away into buildings, frightened. Just another Spren, Shallan Vale radiant thought. That's what I am. Emotion made carnal. She lifted her hands to the sides, exposed yet invisible. She breathed the breaths of a city's people. Pattern said, unweaving himself from her discarded dress. Shallan? Maybe, she said, lingering. Finally, she let herself slip fully into Vale's persona. She immediately shook her head and fetched the clothing and satchel. She was lucky it hadn't been stolen. Foolish girl. They didn't have time for prancing around from poem to poem. Vale found a secluded location beside a large gnarled tree whose roots spread all the way along the wall in either direction. She quickly rearranged her underclothing, then put on her trousers and did up her shirt. She pulled on her hat, checked herself in a hand mirror, then nodded. Right then. Time to meet up with Vatha. He was waiting at the inn where Wit had once stayed. Radiant retained hope that she'd meet him again there, for a more thorough interrogation. In the private room, away from the eyes of the fretting innkeeper, Vatha laid out a couple of spheres to light the maps he'd purchased. They detailed the manor she intended to hit this afternoon. They call it the mausoleum, Vatha explained as Vale sat. He showed her an artist's sketch he'd purchased, which was of the building's grand hall. Those statues are all soul cast, by the way. They're favored servants of the house, turned to storming stone. It's a sign of honor and respect among light eyes. It's creepy, Vatha said. When I die, burn my corpse up right good. Don't leave me staring for eternity while your descendants sip their tea. Vale nodded absently, placing Shallan's sketchbook on the table. Pick an alias from this. This map says the larder is on the outside wall. Time is tight, so we might want to do this one the easy way. Have Red make a distraction, then use Shallan's blade to cut us an opening right into the food. You know, they're said to have quite the fortune at the mausoleum. The Tenet family riches are... He trailed off as he saw her expression. No riches, then. We get the food to pay the cult. Then we get out. Fine. He settled on the image of the man sweeping around his palette, staring at it. You know, when you reformed me from banditry, I figured I was done with stealing. This is different. Different how? We stole mostly food back then, too, Brightness. Just wanted to stay alive and forget. And do you still want to forget? He grunted. Nah, I suppose I don't. Suppose I sleep a little better now at night, don't I?
The door opened and the innkeeper bustled in, holding drinks. Vathe yelped, though Vale turned with a droll expression.
I believe, she said, I wanted to not be interrupted. I brought drinks,
which is an interruption, Vale said, pointing out the door. If we're thirsty, we'll ask. The innkeeper grumbled, then backed out the door, carrying his tray.
He's suspicious, Vale thought. He thinks we were up to something with Wit, and wants to find out what.
Time to move these meetings to another location, eh, Vatha? She looked back at the table, and found someone else sitting there. Vatha was gone, replaced by a bald man with thick knuckles and a well-kept smock. Shallan glanced at the picture on the table, then at the drained sphere beside it, then back at Vatha.
Nice, she said. But you forgot to do the back of the head, the part not in the drawing.
What? Vatha asked, frowning. She showed him the hand mirror.
Why'd you put his face on me?
I didn't, Vale said, standing. You panicked, and this happened. Vatha prodded at his face, still looking in the mirror, confused.
I'll bet the first few times are always accidents, Vale said. She tucked the mirror away.
Gather this stuff up. We'll do the mission as planned, but tomorrow you're relieved of infiltration duty. I'll want you practicing with your stormlight instead.
Practicing.
He finally seemed to get it, his brown eyes opening widely.
Brightness? I'm no storming radiant.
Of course not. You're probably a squire. I think most orders had them. You might become something more. I think Shallan was making illusions off and on for years before she said the oaths. But then it's all kind of muddled in her head. I had my sword when I was very young, and... She took a deep breath. Fortunately, Vale hadn't lived through those days. Pattern hummed in warning.
Brightness, Vatha said. Vale, you really think that I...
Storms? He seemed like he was going to cry. She patted him on the shoulder.
We don't have time to waste. The cult will be waiting for me in 4 hours and expect a nice payment of food.
You going to be all right?
Sure, sure, he said.
The illusion finally dropped, and the image of Vatha himself so emotional was even more striking.
I can do this. Let's go steal from some rich people and give to some crazy people instead.
78. The Revel. A coalition has been formed among Scholar Radiants. Our goal is to deny the enemy their supply of void light. This will prevent their continuing transformations and give us an edge in combat. From Drawer 3020, Second Emerald. Vale had exposed herself. That nagged at her as the wagon, filled with spoils from the robbery, rolled toward the appointed meeting place with the cult. She nestled in the back, against a bag of grain, feet up on a paper-wrapped haunch of cured pork. Swiftspren was Vale, as she was the one who had been seen distributing the food. Therefore, to enter this revel, she would have to go as herself. The enemy knew what she looked like. Should she have created a new persona, a false face, to not expose Vale? But Vale is a false face, a part of her said. You could always abandon her. She strangled that part of her, smothered it deep. Vale was too real, too vital to abandon. Shallan would be easier. First moon was up by the time they reached the steps to the Oathgate platform. Vatha rolled the wagon into place and Vale hopped off, coat rippling around her. Two guards here were dressed as flamespren, with golden and red tassels. Their muscular builds and those two spears set near the steps hinted these men might have been soldiers before joining the cult.
A woman bustled between them, wearing a flat white mask with eye holes but no mouth or other features. Vale narrowed her eyes. The mask reminded her of Iyatil, Marais's master in the Ghost Bloods, but it was a very different shape.
"You were told to come alone, Swiftspren," the woman said.
"You expected me to unload all of this on my own?" Vale waved to the back of the wagon.
"We can handle it," the woman said smoothly, stepping over as one of the guards held up a torch, not a sphere lamp, and the other lowered the wagon's tailgate. Vale turned sharply. "That hum."
The guards started unloading the food. "You can take all but the two bags marked with red," Vale said, pointing. "I need those for my rounds visiting the poor."
"I wasn't aware this was a negotiation," the cultist said. "You asked for this. You've been leaving whispers through the city that you want to join the revel."
Wits work, apparently. She'd have to thank him.
"Why are you here?" the cultist asked, sounding curious. "What is it you want, Swiftspren, so-called hero of the markets?"
"I just keep hearing this voice. It says that this is the end, that I should give in to it, embrace the time of Spren." She turned toward the Oathgate platform. An orange glow was rising from the top. "The answers are up there, aren't they?" From the corner of her eye, she saw the three nod to one another. She'd passed some kind of test.
"You may climb the steps to enlightenment," the cultist in white told her. "Your guide will meet you at the top."
She tossed her hat to Vatha and met his eyes. Once the unloading was through, he'd pull away and set up a few streets farther off, where he could watch the edge of the Oathgate platform. If she had trouble, she would throw herself off, counting on Stormlight to heal her after falling. She started up the steps.
Kaladin normally liked the feeling of the city after a storm, clean and fresh, washed of grime and refuse. He'd done evening patrol, checking over their beat to see everything was all right following the storm. Now he stood on top of the wall, waiting for the rest of his squad, who were still stowing their equipment. The sun had barely set, and it was time for dinner. Below, he picked out buildings newly scarred from lightning strikes. A pod of corrupted windspren danced past, trailing intense red light. Even the smell of the air was wrong somehow, moldy and sodden. Syl sat quietly on his shoulder until Beard and the others piled into the stairwell. He finally joined them, walking down below to the barrack where both platoons, his and the one they shared the space with, were gathering for dinner. Roughly 20 of the men from the other platoon would be on wall duty tonight, but everyone else was present. Not long after Kaladin arrived, the two platoon captains called their men to muster. Kaladin fell into line between Beard and Ved, and together they saluted as Azure stepped into the doorway. She was arrayed for battle, as always, with her breastplate, chain, and cloak. Tonight, she decided to do a formal inspection. Kaladin held attention with the others as she walked down their lines and commented quietly to the two captains. She looked over a few swords and asked several of the men if they needed anything. Kaladin felt as if he'd stood in similar lines 100 times, sweating and hoping that the general would find everything in order. They always did. This wasn't the type of inspection that was intended to actually find problems. This was a chance for the men to show off for their High Marshal. They swelled as she told them they just might be the finest platoons of fighting men I have ever had the privilege of leading. Kaladin was certain he'd heard those exact words from Amaram. Trite or not, the words inspired the men. They gave the High Marshal shouts of approval once they were given leave to break ranks. Perhaps the number of finest platoons in the army went up during times of war, when everyone craved a morale boost. Kaladin walked to the officer's table. It hadn't taken much work to get himself invited to dine with the High Marshal. Noro really wanted him promoted to lieutenant, and most of the others were too intimidated by Azure to sit at her table. The High Marshal hung her cloak and strange sword on a peg. She kept her gloves on, and though he couldn't see her chest because of the breastplate, that face and build were obviously female. She was also very Alethi, with the skin tone and hair, her eyes a glimmering light orange. She must have spent time as a mercenary out west, Kaladin thought. Sigzil had once told him that women fought in the west, particularly among mercenaries. The meal was simple curried grain. Kaladin took a bite, well acquainted by now with the aftertaste of soul-cast grain. A lingering staleness. The curry helped, but the cooks had used the boiled-off starch of the grain to thicken it, so it had some of the same flavor. He'd been placed relatively far from the center of the table, where Azure conversed with the two platoon captains. Eventually, one excused himself to use the privy. Kaladin thought for a moment, then picked up his plate and moved down the table to settle into the open spot.
Vale reached the top of the platform, entering what felt like a little village. The monastery structures here were much smaller, yet far nicer than the ones on the shattered plains had been. A cluster of fine stonework structures, with slanted wedge-shaped roofs, the points toward the origin. Ornamental shale bark grew around the bases of most of the buildings, cultivated and carved into swirling patterns. Vale took a memory for Shallan, but her focus was on the firelight coming from farther inward. She couldn't see the control building. All of these other structures were in the way. She could see the palace, off to her left, glowing in the night with windows lit. It connected to the Oathgate platform by a covered walkway called the Sunwalk. A small group of soldiers, visible in the darkness only as shadows, guarded the way across. Close to her, at the top of the steps, a rotund man sat along a shale-bark ridge. He had short hair and light green eyes, and gave her an affable grin. "Welcome. I'm your guide tonight, for your first time at the revel. It can be, disorienting." "Those are ardent robes," Vale noted, ripped, stained from what appeared to be a variety of foods.
"Everyone who comes up here," he said, hopping off his seat, "is reborn. Your name is now,
he pulled a piece of paper from his pocket.
"Where did I write that? Well, suppose it isn't important. Your name is Kishi. Doesn't that sound nice? Good job getting up here. This is where you'll find the real fun in the city."
He shoved his hands back in his pockets and looked down one of the roadways. Then his shoulders slumped.
"Anyway," he said, "let's get going. Lots of reveling to do tonight. Always so much reveling to be done."
"And you are?"
"Me? Harat is what they named me. I think? I forget."
He ambled forward without waiting to see if she followed. She did, eager to get to the center. However, just past the first building, she reached the revel and had to stop to take it in. A bonfire burned right on the ground, flames crackling and whipping in the wind, bathing Vale in heat. Corrupted flame spren, vivid blue and somehow more jagged, danced inside of it. Tables lined the walkway here, piled with food. Candied meats, stacks of flatbread crusted with sugar, fruits, and pastries. A variety of people passed by, occasionally scooping food off the tables with their bare hands. They laughed and shouted. Many had been ardents, marked by brown robes. Others were light eyes, though their clothing had decayed. It seemed a fitting word for these suits with missing jackets, hava dresses whose skirts were ragged from brushing the ground, safehand sleeves ripped off at the shoulder and discarded somewhere. They moved like fish in a school, flowing from right to left. She picked out soldiers, both light-eyed and dark, in the remnants of uniforms. They seemed to take no note of her, or of Harat, standing to the side. She'd have to cut through the stream of people to get farther inward to the Oathgate control building. She started to do so, but Harat took her by the arm, steering her to join the flow of people.
"We have to stay to the outer ring," he said. "No going inward for us. Nope. Be happy. You get to enjoy the end of the world in style."
She reluctantly let herself be pulled along. It was probably best to do a round of the platform anyway. However, not long after starting, she began to hear the voice.
"Let go. Give up your pain. Feast. Indulge. Embrace the end."
Pattern hummed on her coat, his sound lost to the many people laughing and drinking. Harat stuck his fingers into some kind of creamy dessert, taking it by the handful. His eyes had glazed over, and he muttered to himself as he pushed the food into his mouth. Though others laughed and even danced, most showed that same glassy look. She could feel Pattern's vibrations on her coat. It seemed to counteract the voices, clearing her head. Harat handed her a cup of wine he'd scooped from a table. Who set this all up? Where were the servants? There was just so much food. Tables and tables of it. People moved in buildings they passed, engaging in other carnal delights. Vale tried to slip across the stream of revelers, but Harat kept hold of her.
"Everyone wants to go inward their first time," he said. "You aren't allowed. Enjoy this. Enjoy the feeling. It's not our fault, right? We didn't fail her. We were only doing what she asked. Don't cause a storm, girl. Nobody wants that."
He hung on to Vale's arm. So instead she waited until they passed another building and tugged him that way.
"Going to find a partner?" he asked, numb. "Sure, that's allowed. Assuming you can find anyone still sober enough to care."
They entered the building, which had once been a place for meditation, filled with individual rooms. It smelled sharply of incense, and each alcove had its own brazier for burning prayers. Those were now occupied for another sort of experience.
"I just want to rest a moment," she told Harat, peeking into an empty room. It had a window. She could slip out that, maybe. "It's all so overwhelming."
"Oh." He looked over his shoulder toward the revel passing outside. His left hand was still coated with sweet paste. Vale stepped into the chamber. When he tried to follow, she said,
"I need a moment alone." "I'm supposed to keep watch on you," he said, and prevented her from closing the door. "Then watch," she said, and settled down on the bench inside the cell, from a distance.
He sighed and sat down on the floor of the hallway.
"Now what?"
A new face, she thought. What did he name me? Kishi. It meant mystery. She used a memory she'd drawn earlier in the day, that of a woman from the market. In her mind, Shallan added touches to the clothing. A hava, ragged like the others. An exposed safe hand. It would do. She wished she could sketch it, but she could make this work. Now what to do about her guard? "He probably hears voices," she thought. "I can use that." She pressed her hand to Pattern and wove sound.
"Go," she whispered. "Hang on the wall of the hallway outside next to him."
Pattern softly hummed his reply. She closed her eyes and could faintly hear the words she'd woven to be whispered near Harat.
"Indulge. Get something to drink. Join the revel." "You going to just sit there?" Harat called into her.
"Yes."
"I'm going to get something to drink. Don't leave."
"Fine."
He rose, then jogged out. By the time he got back, she had attached an illusion of Vale to a ruby mark, then left it there. It showed Vale resting on the bench, eyes closed, snoring softly. Kishi passed Harat in the hallway, stepping with glassy eyes. He didn't spare her a second glance, and instead settled down in the hallway with a large cup of wine to watch Vale. Kishi joined the revel outside.
A man there laughed and grabbed at her safe hand, as if to pull her toward one of the rooms. Kishi dodged him and slipped farther inward, flowing through the stream of people. This outer ring seemed to round the entire Oathgate platform. The secrets were farther toward the center. Nobody forbade Kishi as she left the flow of the outer ring, stepping between two buildings, heading inward.
The others stopped their small talk, and the officer's table grew very still as Kaladin settled down across from Azure. The High Marshal laced her gloved hands before herself.
"Cal, is it?" she said. "The light-eyed man with slave brands. How are you finding your time in the Wall Guard?"
"It's a well-run army, sir, and strangely welcoming of one such as myself."
He then nodded over the High Marshal's shoulder.
"I've never seen someone treat a shard blade so casually. You just hang it on a peg?"
The others at the table watched with obviously held breaths.
"I'm not particularly worried about anyone taking her," Azure said. "I trust these men."
"It's still remarkable," Kaladin said. "Foolhardy, even."
Across the table, two places down from Azure, Lieutenant Noro raised his hands silently toward Kaladin in a pleading way.
"Don't screw this up, Cal."
But Azure smiled.
"I never did get an explanation for that Shashbrand soldier."
"I never gave a proper one, sir," Kaladin said. "I'm not fond of the memories that earned me the scar."
"How did you end up in this city?" Azure asked. "Sarius's lands are far to the north. There are several armies of Voidbringers between here and there, by report." "I flew." "How about you, sir?"
"You couldn't have been in the city long before the siege began. Nobody talks of you earlier than that time. They say you appeared right when the guard needed you."
"Perhaps I was always here, but merely blended in."
"With those scars? They may not spell out danger as explicitly as mine, but they'd have been memorable."
The rest of the table, lieutenants and the platoon captain, stared at Kaladin slack-jawed. Perhaps he was pushing too hard, acting too far above his station. He'd never been good at acting his station, though.
"Perhaps," Azure said, "one shouldn't be questioning my arrival. Be thankful someone was here when the city needed them."
"I am thankful," Kaladin said. "Your reputation with these men commends you, Azure, and extreme times can excuse a great deal. Eventually, though, you'll need to come clean. These men deserve to know who, exactly, is commanding them."
"And what about you, Cal?"
She took a spoonful of curry and rice, men's food, which she ate with gusto.
"Do they deserve to know your past? Shouldn't you come clean?"
"Perhaps.
I am your commanding officer, you realize. You should answer me when I ask questions."
"I've given answers," Kaladin said. "If they aren't the ones you want, then perhaps your questions aren't very good."
Noro gasped audibly.
"And you, Cal, you make statements dripping with implications. You want answers? Why not just ask?"
Storms, she was right. He'd been dancing around serious questions. Kaladin looked her in the eyes.
"Why won't you let anyone talk about the fact that you're a woman, Azure?"
"Noro, don't faint. You'll embarrass us all."
The lieutenant thumped his forehead against the table, groaning softly. The captain lord, with whom Kaladin hadn't interacted much, had gone red-faced.
"They came up with this game on their own," Azure said. "They're a Lethe, so they need an excuse for why they're listening to a woman giving military orders. Pretending there's some mystery focuses them on that, instead of on masculine pride. I find the entire thing silly."
She leaned forward.
"Tell me honestly, did you come here chasing me?"
"Chasing you?" Kaladin cocked his head. Drums sounded in the near distance. It took a moment for them, even Kaladin, to register what that meant. Then Kaladin and Azure threw themselves back from the bench at nearly the same time.
"To arms!" Kaladin shouted. "There's an attack on the wall!"
The next ring inward on the Oathgate platform was filled with people crawling. Kishi stood at the perimeter, watching a multitude of men and women in ragged finery crawl past her, giggling, moaning, or gasping. Each seemed in the thrall of a different emotion, and each stared with an openly maddened expression. She thought she recognized a few from the descriptions of Light Eyes who had disappeared into the palace, though in their state, it was hard to tell. A woman with long hair dragging on the ground looked toward her, grinning with clenched teeth and bleeding gums. She crawled, one hand after another, her hava shredded, faded. She was followed by a man wearing rings glowing with stormlight, in contrast to his ripped clothing. He giggled incessantly. The food on the tables here rotted and was infested with decay spren. Kishi wavered at the edge of the ring. She should have kept to the outer ring. She didn't belong here. There was food aplenty behind her, laughter and reveling. It seemed to pull her back, inviting her to join the eternal beautiful walk. Within that ring, time wouldn't matter. She could forget Shallan and what she'd done. Just give in. Pattern hummed. Vale gasped, letting Kishi burst from her, light weaving collapsing. Storms. She had to be away from this place. It was doing things to her brain, strange things, even for her. Not yet. She pulled her coat tight, then picked her way across the street full of crawling people. No bonfire lit her way, only the moon overhead and the light of the jewelry the people wore. Storms. Where had they all gone for the storm? Their moaning, chittering, and babbling chased her as she crossed the street, then hurried down a dark pathway between two monastery buildings, inward, toward the control building, which should be right ahead. The voices in her head combined from whispers to a kind of surging rhythm, a thumping of impressions, followed by a pause, followed by another surge, almost like... She stepped between the buildings and entered a moonlit square, colored violet from Salus above. Instead of the control building, she found an overgrown mass. Something had covered the entire structure, like the Midnight Mother had enveloped the gemstone pillar beneath Urethiru. The dark mass pulsed and throbbed. Black veins as thick as a man's leg ran from it and melded with the ground nearby. A heart. It beat an irregular rhythm. Bum-ba-ba-bum, instead of the common ba-bum of her own heartbeat. Give in. Join the revel. Shallan, listen to me. She shook herself. That last voice had been different. She'd heard it before, hadn't she? She looked to the side and found her shadow on the ground, pointed the wrong way, toward the moonlight instead of away from it. The shadow crept up the wall, with eyes that were white holes, glowing faintly. I'm not your enemy, but the heart is a trap. Take caution. Distantly, drums started sounding on the top of the wall. The Voidbringers were attacking. It all threatened to overwhelm her. The thumping heart, the strange processions in rings around it, the drums and the panic that the fused were coming for her because she'd been seen. Vale seized control. She'd accomplished her goal, she'd scouted the area, and she had information about the Oathgate. It was time to get out. She turned and forcibly put on Kishi's face. She crossed the stream of crawling, moaning people. She flowed back into the outer ring of revelers before slipping out. She didn't check on her guide. She walked to the rim of the Oathgate platform and, without a look back, leaped off.
79. Echoes of Thunder. A revelation is fueled by the theory that the unmade can perhaps be captured like ordinary spren. It would require a special prison. And Malishi. From Drawer 3020, Third Emerald. Kaladin charged up the stairwell beside High Marshal Azure, the sound of drums breaking the air like echoes of thunder from the departed storm. He counted the beats.
Storms, that's my section under assault.
Damnation, these creatures, Azure muttered. I'm missing something. Like white on black. She glanced at Kaladin.
Just tell me, who are you?
Who are you? The two burst out of the stairwell onto the wall's top, entering a scene of chaos. The soldiers on duty had lit the enormous oil lamps on the tops of the towers, giving light to the dark walls. Fused swooped between them, trailing dark violet light, attacking with long, bloodied lances. Men lay screaming on the ground or huddled in pairs, holding up shields as if trying to hide from the nightmares above. Kaladin and Azure exchanged a look, then nodded to one another. Later. She broke left and Kaladin dashed right, shouting for men to form up. Syl spun around his head, concerned, anxious. Kaladin scooped his shield off the ground and seized a soldier by the arm, towing him around and locking shields. A swooping lance clanged off the metal, sending a jolt through Kaladin. The Voidbringer flew past. Pained, Kaladin ignored the wounded and bleeding who crawled with corrupted pain spren. He pulled the scattered remnants of the 8th platoon back together while his own men stumbled to a halt outside the stairwell. These were their friends, the people with whom they shared a barrack.
"To your right and up!" Syl shouted.
Kaladin set himself and used his shield to push aside the lance of a Voidbringer whose sword passed. A second Voidbringer followed, wearing a long skirt of rippling crimson cloth. The way she flew was almost mesmerizing. Right up until her lance pinned Captain Didanor against the wall's battlements, then lifted him and tossed him over. He screamed as he plummeted toward the ground below. Kaladin almost broke rank and ran for him, but held himself in line by force. He reached by instinct for the stormlight in his pouch, but held himself back. Using it for lashing would attract screamers, and in this darkness even drawing in a small amount would reveal him for what he was. The fused would all attack him together. He would risk undermining the mission to save the entire city. Today, he protected best through discipline, order, and keeping a level head.
"Squads 1 and 2, with me!" he shouted. "Vardanar, you've got 5 and 6. Have your men hand out pikes, then grab bows and get to the tower's top. Noru, take squads 3 and 4 and set up on the wall walk just past the tower. My men will hold here on this side. Go, go!"
Nobody voiced a complaint as they scrambled to do as he said. Kaladin heard shouts from the High Marshal farther down the wall, but didn't have a chance to see how she was doing. As his two squads finally got a proper shield wall mounted, a human corpse slammed down onto the wall walk nearby. It had been dropped from very high up, or perhaps it had been lashed into the sky and had only now fallen. Most of the wounded men were archers from the 8th platoon. It looked like they'd been swept from the top of the tower.
"We can't fight these things," Kaladin thought.
The Voidbringers attacked in sweeping dives, coming in from all directions. It was impossible to maintain a normal formation beneath that assault. Syl shifted into the shape of a girl and looked at him questioningly. He shook his head. He could fight without stormlight. He'd protected people long before he could fly. He started to call out orders, but a fused passed by, slapping at their pikes with a large shield. Before the men could get them reoriented, another crashed down into the center of them, sending soldiers stumbling. A violet glow steamed from the creature's body as it swept around with its lance, wielding it like an oversized staff. Kaladin ducked by instinct, trying to maneuver his pike. The fused grinned as the formation disintegrated. It was mail, reminiscent of a Parshendi, with layered plates of chitin armor creeping down across its forehead and rising from cheeks that were marbled black and red. Kaladin leveled his pike, but the creature lunged along it and pressed its hand against Kaladin's chest. He felt himself grow lighter, but also suddenly begin to fall backward. The creature had lashed him. Kaladin fell back, like he was toppling off a ledge, falling along the wall toward a group of his men. The fused wanted Kaladin to crash into them, but it had made a mistake. The sky was his. Kaladin responded immediately to the lashing and reoriented himself in the blink of an eye. Down became the direction he was falling, along the walkway, toward the towering guard post. His men seemed to be stuck to the side of a cliff, turning toward him, horrified. Kaladin was able to shove against the stone with the end of his pike,
moving him to the side as he whooshed past his men instead of crashing into them. Syl joined him as a ribbon, and he twisted, falling feet first along the walkway toward the guard tower below. He was able to nudge himself, so he fell right into the open doorway. He dropped the pike, then caught the lip of the doorway as he passed through it. He stopped with a jarring lurch, arms protesting with pain. But that maneuver slowed him enough. When he swung and let go, he dropped through the room, past the dining table, which seemed glued to the wall, and landed on the opposite wall, inside the building. He stepped over to the other doorway, which looked out onto the walk where he'd positioned Noro's squad. Beard and Ved held pikes toward the sky, looking anxious.
"Kaladin," Syl said. "Above!"
He looked upward and out the doorway he'd come through. The Voidbringer who had lashed him came soaring downward, carrying a lance. It curved to bypass the tower, preparing to whip around and attack Beard and the men on the other side. Kaladin growled and dashed along the inside wall of the tower, pulled himself up past the table, then hurled himself out a window. He crashed into the Voidbringer in midair, shoving the creature's lance to the side.
"Leave my men alone!"
Kaladin clung to the clothing of the monster, spinning in the air dozens of feet above the dark city, sparkling with the light of spheres in windows or lanterns. The Voidbringer lashed them higher, falsely assuming that the more height it had, the more advantage it would gain over Kaladin. Holding tightly with his left hand, wind whipping around them, Kaladin reached out with his right hand and summoned Syl as a long knife. She appeared immediately, and Kaladin shoved the diminutive shard blade into the creature's stomach. The Voidbringer grunted and looked at him with deep, glowing red eyes. It dropped its lance and began to claw at Kaladin while spinning itself in the air, trying to throw him free.
"They can survive wounds," Kaladin thought, gritting his teeth as the thing gripped at his neck. "Like radiance. That void light sustains them."
Kaladin still refrained from drawing in his own stormlight. He suffered the fused's lashings as it spun them in the air, shouting in a language Kaladin didn't understand. He tried to maneuver the shard knife and cut the thing's spine. The weapon was insanely sharp, but for the moment, leverage and disorientation were bigger factors. The Voidbringer grunted, then lashed itself, with Kaladin hanging on, back downward toward the wall. They fell quickly, a double or triple lashing, spiraling and screaming toward the wall walk.
"Kaladin!" Syl's voice in his head. "I sense something. Something about its power. Cut upward. Toward the heart."
The city, the battle, the sky, all became a blur. Kaladin forced his blade farther into the creature's chest, pushing it upward, seeking... The shard knife struck something brittle and hard. The fused red's eyes winked out. Kaladin twisted, putting the corpse beneath him in the wall walk. They hit hard, and he bounced off the corpse, then hit the stones with a crack. He groaned, eyes flashing with pain, and was forced, by instinct, to take in a breath of stormlight to heal the damage of the fall. That light flowed through him, re-knitting bones, repairing organs. It was used up in a moment, and he forced himself not to draw in more, instead pushing himself up and shaking his head. The Voidbringer stared sightlessly from the wall walk beside him. It was dead. Ahead, the other fused began streaking away in retreat, leaving a broken and battered group of guards. Kaladin stumbled to his feet. His section of the wall was empty, save for the dead and the dying. He didn't recognize any. He'd hit the wall some 50 feet away from his platoon's position. Syl landed on his shoulder and patted him on the side of the head. Painspren littered the wall, crawling this way and that in the shape of hands without skin. "This city is doomed," Kaladin thought as he knelt by one of the wounded and quickly prepared a bandage by slicing up a fallen cloak. "Storms. We might all be doomed. We're not anywhere near ready to fight these things." It looked like Noro's squad, at least, had survived. They jogged down the wall and gathered around the Voidbringer Kaladin had killed, nudging it with the butts of their pikes. Kaladin tied off a tourniquet, then moved to another man whose head he wrapped. Soon army surgeons flooded the wall. Kaladin stepped back, bloodied, but more angry than tired. He turned to Noro, Beard, and the others who had gathered around him.
"You killed one," Beard said, feeling at his arm with the empty glyph ward. "Storms. You actually killed one, Cal."
"How many have you brought down?"
Kaladin asked, realizing that he'd never asked.
"How many has the wall guard killed during the assaults these last weeks?"
His men shared glances. "Azure drove a few off," Noro said. "They're afraid of her shard blade. But as for Voidbringers killed, this would be the first, Cal."
Storms.
Even worse, the one he'd killed would be reborn. Unless the Heralds set up their prison again, Kaladin couldn't ever really kill one of the fused. "I need to talk to Azure," he said, striding down the wall walk. "Noro, report."
"None fallen, sir. Though Vasilev took a gash to the chest. He's with the surgeons and should pull through."
"Good. Squad, you're with me." He found Azure surveying the 8th Platoon's losses near their guard tower. She had her cloak off and held oddly in one hand wrapped around her forearm, with part of it draping down below. Her unsheathed shard blade glittered, long and silvery. Kaladin stepped up to her, the sleeve of his uniform stained dark with the blood of the Voidbringer he'd killed. Azure looked tired, and she gestured with her sword outward.
"Have a look."
Lights lit the horizon. Sphere lights. Thousands upon thousands of them. Far more than he'd seen on previous nights. They blanketed the landscape.
"That's the entire enemy army," Azure said. "I'd bet my red life on it. Somehow they marched them through that storm earlier today. It won't be long now. They'll have to attack before the next high storm. A few days at most."
"I need to know what's going on here, Azure," Kaladin said. "How are you getting food for this army?" She drew her lips to a line.
"He killed one, High Marshal," Beard whispered from behind him. "Storms. He took one of them down. Grabbed on like he was mounting a storming horse, and then rode the bastard through the sky."
The woman studied him, and reluctantly Kaladin summoned Syl as a shard blade. Noro's eyes bulged and Ved nearly fainted, though Beard just grinned.
"I'm here," Kaladin said, resting the Syl blade on his shoulder. "On orders from King Elokar and the Blackthorn. It's my job to save Kolinar, and it's time you started talking to me."
She smiled at him.
"Come with me."
80. Oblivious. Ba-Ado Mishram has somehow connected with the Parsh people, as Odium once did. She provides void light and facilitates forms of power. Our strike team is going to imprison her. From drawer 3020, Fourth Emerald. Grund wasn't at his normal spot, inside the corner of the broken shop. The place hadn't fared well during the Everstorm. The ceiling was sagging even more, and a snarl of tree branches had been blown in through the window, littering the floor. Vale frowned, calling his name. After fleeing the Oathgate platform, she'd met up with Vatha, who had been waiting as instructed. She'd sent Vatha back to report to the king, and probably should have gone herself. But she hadn't been able to shake the eerie disquiet of her trip through the revel. Going back home would have left her too much time to think. Vale wanted to be out working instead. Monsters and void bringers were something she couldn't comprehend, but starving children, she could do something about that. She'd taken the 2 remaining sacks of food and gone to help the city's people. If she could find them. "Grund," Vale repeated, leaning farther in through the window. Before, he'd always been up at this time. Perhaps he'd finally moved out of the building like all the others had. Or maybe he hadn't gotten back from the storm shelter yet, following the Everstorm. She turned to leave, but Grund finally stumbled into the room. The little urchin tucked his malformed hand into his pocket and scowled at her. That was odd. He normally seemed so happy when she arrived. "What's wrong?" she asked. "Nothing," he said. "Thought you was someone else." He gave her a grin. Vale fished a few pieces of flatbread from her bag. "Not much today, I'm afraid. I wanted to make sure to stop by, though. The information you gave us on that book was very helpful." He licked his lips, holding out his hands. She tossed him the flatbread, and he took an eager bite. "What do you need next?" "Nothing right now," Vale said. "Come on. There has to be something I can do to help. Something you want, right?" Too desperate, Vale thought. What is beneath the surface here? What have I missed? "I'll consider," she said. "Grund, is everything all right?" "Right, sure. Everything is great." He paused. "Unless it shouldn't be." Pattern hummed softly on Vale's coat. She agreed. "I'll stop by again in a few days. Should have a big haul then." Vale tipped her hat to the urchin, then slipped back into the market. It was late, but people lingered. Nobody wanted to be alone on days after the Everstorm came. Some looked toward the wall where those fused had attacked. But that sort of thing happened almost daily, so it didn't cause too much of a stir. Vale drew more attention than she'd have wanted. She'd exposed herself to them, given up her face.
"Grund tells lies, doesn't he?" Pattern whispered.
"Yeah, I'm not sure why, or what about." As she wove into the market, she put her hand before her face, changing it with a wave of the fingers. She took her hat off, folded it, and covertly light-wove it to look like a waterskin. Each was a little change that nobody would notice. She tucked her hair into her coat, made it look shorter, then finally closed her coat and changed the clothing underneath. When she took off the coat and folded it up, she was no longer Vale, but a market guard she'd drawn earlier. Rolled coat under her arm, she lingered at a corner and waited to see if anyone passed, looking for Vale. She didn't spot anyone, though her training with Ishnat spotting tails wasn't yet extensive. She threaded her way back through the crowd to Grum's shop again. She lingered near the wall, then eased toward the window, listening.
"Told you we shouldn't have given her the book," a voice was saying inside. "This is pathetic," another said. "Pathetic. That was the best you could do?"
She heard a grunt and a whimper. "That's Grund." Vale cursed softly, scrambling around to look in through the window. A group of thugs was chewing on the flatbread she'd brought. Grund lay in the corner, whimpering and holding his stomach. Vale felt a flash of rage, and Angerspren immediately boiled around her, pools that sprayed red and orange. She shouted at the men and dashed for the doorway. They immediately scattered, though one slammed a cudgel onto Grund's head with a sickening crunch. By the time she reached Grund, the men had vanished farther into the building. She heard the door in the back slam closed. Pattern appeared in her hand as a shard blade, but Stormfather, she couldn't give chase. Not and leave the poor child here. Vale dismissed Pattern and knelt, aghast at the bloody wound in Grund's head. It was bad. The skull was broken, bleeding. He blinked, dazed.
Vale?
"Storms, Grund," she whispered. What could she do?
"Help! Help somebody! There's a wounded child in here!"
Grund whimpered, then whispered something. Vale leaned close, feeling useless.
"Hate," Grund whispered. "Hate you."
"It's all right," Vale said. "They're gone now. They ran. I'll help." Bandage. She cut at her shirt tails with her knife.
"Hate you,"
Grund whispered. "It's me, Grund, not those others."
"Why couldn't you leave me alone?"
he whispered.
"They killed them all. My friends. Ty."
Vale pressed the cloth against his head wound and he winced. "Storms. Quiet. Don't exert yourself."
"Hate you,"
he repeated. "I brought you food, Grund."
"You drew them,"
he hissed.
"You strutted around throwing food. You thought people wouldn't notice?"
He closed his eyes.
"Had to sit all day, wait for you. My life was waiting for you. If I wasn't here when you came or if I tried to hide the food, they'd beat me."
"How long?"
she whispered, feeling her confidence shake.
Since the first day, you storming woman! Hate you. Others, too. We all hate you.
She sat with him as his breathing slowed, then cut off. Finally, she knelt back, bloodied cloth in her hands. Vale could handle this. She'd seen death. It was life. On the street, and too much. Too much for one day. Shallan blinked tears from the corners of her eyes. Pattern hummed.
Shallan, he said. The boy, he spoke of the others. Others?
Storms! She threw herself to her feet and pushed out into the night, dropping Vale's hat and coat in her haste. She ran for Muri, the mother who had once been a seamstress. Shallan shoved through the market until she reached the packed tenement where the seamstress lived. She crossed the common room, then breathed a sigh of relief as she found Muri alive inside her small room. The woman was hurriedly tossing clothing into a sack, her eldest daughter clutching a similar one. She looked up, saw Shallan, who still looked like Vale, and cursed to herself.
You!
The frown lines and scowl were unfamiliar. She'd always seemed so pleasant.
You know already? Shallan asked. About Grund?
Grund? Muri snapped.
All I know is that the Grips are angry about something. I'm not going to take a chance.
The Grips?
How oblivious are you, woman? The gang in charge of this area has had toughs watching us all for when you next arrived. The one watching me met with another and they had a quiet argument, then took off. I heard my name, so I'm leaving.
They took the food I gave you, didn't they?
Storms, they killed Grund.
Muri stopped, then shook her head.
Poor kid. Better you than he.
She cursed, gathering her sacks and shoving her children toward the common room.
We always had to sit here waiting for you and your storming sack of goodies.
I'm sorry. Muri left into the night with her children. Shallan watched them go, feeling numb, empty. She quietly sank down in Muri's deserted room, still holding the cloth with Grund's blood.
81. Ithi and her sister. We are uncertain the effect this will have on the Parsh. At the very least, it should deny them forms of power. Melishi is confident, but Naze, daughter Kuzodo, warns of unintended side effects. From Drawer 3020, 5th Emerald. My name is Kaladin, he said, standing in the barrack common room, which had been emptied at the High Marshal's order. Noro's squad had remained by Kaladin's request, and Azure had invited in Battalion Lord Hadinar, a stocky, bejoweled fellow, one of Azure's primary officers. The only other person in the room was the fidgety Ardent who painted glyph wards for the platoon. Soft blue sphere light bathed the table where most of them sat. Kaladin stood instead, washing the blood from his hands with a damp rag at a water basin.
Kaladin, Azure mused. A regal name? What's your house?
They just call me Stormblessed. If you need proof of my orders from the king, it can be arranged.
Let's pretend, for the sake of conversation, that I believe you, Azure said. What do you want from us?
I need to know how you're using a soul caster without drawing the attention of the screaming Spren. The secret might be essential to my work to save the city. Azure nodded, then rose and walked toward the back of the barrack. She used a key to open the back room. Kaladin had glanced in there before, though. It only held some supplies. The rest of them followed Azure into the room, where she slipped a small hook between two stones and threw a hidden latch. This let her remove a stone, revealing a handle. She heaved, pulling open a doorway. The light of a few handheld spheres revealed a small corridor that ran down the middle of the city wall.
You cut a tunnel in one of the wind blades, sir?
Beard asked, shocked. This has been here longer than any of us have been alive, soldier, Battalion Lord Hadinar said. It is a quick, secret way between posts. There are even a few hidden stairwells up to the top. They had to go single file inside. Beard followed behind Kaladin, scrunched up against him in the confines. So Cal, you know the Blackthorn?
Better than most.
And, you know that the two of you never went swimming together in the Pure Lake? Kaladin said.
Yes, though I suspect the rest of the squad guessed that, Beard.
Yeah, he said, glancing back at the others. He exhaled softly. I figured you'd never believe the truth, since it was actually the Azish Emperor.
This corridor, cut through the stone, reminded Kaladin of the strata of Urethiru. They reached a trap door in the floor, which Azure opened with a key. A short trip down a ladder, which had a dumbwaiter beside it with ropes and pulleys, led them to a large room filled with sacks of grain. Kaladin held up a sphere, revealing a jagged wall with chunks cut out of it in a distinctly uneven way.
I come down here every night or so, Azure said, pointing with a gloved hand, and cut out blocks with my blade. I have nightmares about the city collapsing down on us, but I don't know of another way to get enough stone. At least, not without drawing even more attention.
On the other side of the chamber, they found yet another locked door. Azure knocked twice, then opened this one, revealing a smaller room occupied by an aged female Ardent. She knelt beside a stone block and wore a distinctive fabriole on her hand, one that glowed powerfully with light from the emeralds it contained. The woman had an inhuman look to her. She seemed to be growing vines under her skin, and they peeked out around her eyes, growing from the corners and spreading down her face like runners of ivy. She stood and bowed to Azure, a real soul caster. So, Azure wasn't doing it herself?
How? Kaladin asked. Why didn't the screamers come for you?
Azure pointed at the sides of the room, and for the first time Kaladin noticed the walls were covered with reflective metal plates. He frowned and rested his fingers against one and found it cool to the touch. This wasn't steel, was it?
Soon after the strangeness at the palace began, Azure said, a man pulled a chul cart up to the front of our barrack. He had these sheets of metal in the back. He was an odd fellow. I've had interactions with him before.
Angular features, Kaladin guessed. Quick with an insult, silly and straight somehow all at once.
You know him, I see, Azure said. He warned us to only soul cast inside a room lined with this metal. So far as we can tell, it prevents the screamers from sensing us. Unfortunately, it also blocks span reeds from contacting the outside. We keep poor Ithi and her sister working non-stop, trading off the soul caster. Feeding the entire city would be an impossible task for the two of them, but we've been able to at least keep our army strong with some despair.
Damnation, Kaladin thought, inspecting the reflective walls. This wasn't going to help him use his powers without notice.
All right, Stormblessed, Azure said. I've opened our secrets to you. Now you'll tell me how the king could expect one man, even a shard-bearer, to be able to save this city.
There's a device in Kolinar, he said, of ancient design. It can instantly transport large groups of people across great distances.
He turned toward Azure and the others. The Kolin armies wait to join us here. All we need to do is activate the device, something that only a select few people can do. The soldiers looked stunned, all but Azure, who perked up.
Really? You're serious? Kaladin nodded. Great. Let's get this thing working. Where is it?
Kaladin took a deep breath.
Well, that happens to be the problem.
82. The Girl Who Stood Up. Surely this will bring, at long last, the end to war that the heralds promised us.
From drawer 3020. Final Emerald. She huddled someplace. She'd forgotten where. For a while, she'd been everybody. 100 faces, cycling one after another. She searched them for comfort. Surely she could find someone who didn't hurt. All the nearby refugees had fled, naming her a Spren. They left her with those 100 faces, in silence, until her stormlight died off. That left only Shallan, unfortunately. Darkness, a candle snuffed out, a scream cut off. With nothing to see, her mind provided images. Her father, his face turning purple as she strangled him, singing a lullaby. Her mother, dead, with burned eyes. Tin, run through by pattern. Kabsul, shaking on the floor as he succumbed to poison. Yalb, the incorrigible sailor from Wind's Pleasure, dead in the depths of the sea. An unnamed coachman, murdered by members of the Ghost Bloods. Now Grund, his head opened up. Vale had tried to help these people, but had succeeded only in making their lives worse. The lie that was Vale became suddenly manifest. She hadn't lived on the streets, and she didn't know how to help people. Pretending to have experience didn't mean she actually did. Vale had always thought to herself that Shallan could handle the big picture, the Voidbringers and the Unmade. Now she had to confront the truth that she had no idea what to do. She couldn't get to the Oath Gate. It was guarded by an ancient Spren that could get inside her brain. The whole city was depending on her, but she hadn't even been able to save a little beggar boy. As she curled up on the floor, Grund's death seemed a shadow of everything else, of her good intentions turned arrogant. Everywhere she trod, death haunted her. Every face she wore was a lie to pretend she could stop it. Couldn't she be somebody who didn't hurt? Just once? Light pushed shadows before it, long and slender. She blinked, momentarily transfixed. How many days had it been since she'd seen light? A figure stepped into the common room outside her little hole of a chamber. She was still in the long room Muri had lived in. She sniffled softly. The newcomer brought his light to her doorway, then carefully stepped inside and settled down across from her, his back against the wall. The room was narrow enough that his legs stretched out and touched the wall beside her. She had hers drawn up, knees against her chest, head resting on them. Wit didn't speak. He put his sphere on the floor and let her have the silence.
"I should have known better," she finally whispered.
"Perhaps," Wit said.
"Giving out so much food only drew predators. Foolish. I should have focused on the Oath Gate."
"Again. Perhaps."
"It's so hard, Wit. When I wear Vale's face, I have to think like her. Seeing the larger scope grows difficult when she takes over, and I want her to take over because she's not me."
"The thieves who killed that child have been seen to," Wit said. She looked up at him. "When some of the men in the market heard what had happened," Wit continued, "they finally formed the militia they'd been talking about. They rushed the grips, forcing them to give up the murderer, then disperse. I apologize for not acting sooner. I had been distracted by other tasks. You'll be pleased to know that some of the food you gave away was still in their base."
"Was it worth that boy's life?"
Shallan whispered. "I cannot judge the worth of a life. I would not dare to attempt it.
Muri said it would be better if I were dead.
As I lack the experience to decide the worth of a life, I sincerely doubt that she has somehow obtained it. You tried to help the people of the market. You mostly failed. This is life. The longer you live, the more you fail. Failure is the mark of a life well lived. In turn, the only way to live without failure is to be of no use to anyone. Trust me, I've practiced." She sniffled, looking away.
I have to become Vale to escape the memories, but I don't have the experience that she pretends to have. I haven't lived her life.
No, Wit said softly. You've lived a harsher one, haven't you?
Yet still, somehow, a naive one.
She drew in a deep, ragged breath. She had to stop this. She knew she had to get over the tantrum and go back to the tailor's shop. She'd do it. She'd shove all this into the back of her mind with everything else she ignored. They could all fester together. Wit settled back.
Have you heard the story of the girl who looked up?
Shallan didn't reply.
It's a story from long ago, Wit said.
He cupped his hands around the sphere on the floor.
Things were different in that time. A wall kept out the storms, but everyone ignored it. All but one girl, who looked up one day and contemplated it. Why is there a wall?
Shallan whispered.
Oh, so you do know it. Good.
He leaned down, blowing at the creme dust on the floor. It swirled up, making a figure of a girl. It gave the brief impression of her standing before a wall, but then disintegrated back into dust. He tried again, and it swirled a little higher this time, but still fell back to dust.
A little help? He asked.
He pushed a bag of spheres across the ground toward Shallan. Shallan sighed, then picked up the bag and drew in the stormlight. It started to rage within her, demanding to be used, so she stood up and breathed out, weaving it into an illusion she'd done once before. A pristine village, and a young girl standing and looking upward, toward an impossibly tall wall in the distance. The illusion made the room seem to vanish. Somehow, Shallan painted the walls and ceiling in precisely the right way, making them disappear into the landscape, become part of it. She hadn't made them invisible. They were merely covered up in a way that made it seem Shallan and Wit were standing in another place. This was more than she'd ever done before. But was she really doing it? Shallan shook her head and stepped up beside the girl, who wore long scarves. Wit stepped up on the other side. He said. Not bad, but it's not dark enough.
What? I thought you knew the story, Wit said, tapping the air.
The color and light bled from her illusion, leaving them standing in the darkness of night, lit only by a frail set of stars. The wall was an enormous blot before them.
In these days, there was no light.
No light?
Of course, even without light, people still had to live, didn't they? That's what people do. I hasten to guess it's the first thing they learn how to do. So they lived in the darkness, farmed in the darkness, ate in the darkness.
He waved behind him. People stumbled about in the village, feeling their way to different activities, barely able to see by the starlight. In this context, strange though it seemed, some pieces of the story as she'd told it made sense. When the girl went up to people and asked, "Why is there a wall?" it was obvious why they found it so easy to ignore. The illusion followed Wit's words as the girl in the scarves asked several people about the wall.
"Don't go beyond it, or you shall die."
"And so," Wit said, "she decided that the only way she'd find answers would be to climb the wall herself." He glanced at Shallan.
"Was she stupid or bold?"
"How should I know?"
"Wrong answer. She was both."
"It wasn't stupid. If nobody asked questions, then we would never learn anything."
"What of the wisdom of her elders?"
"They offered no explanation for why she shouldn't ask about the wall. No rationalization, no justification. There's a difference between listening to your elders and just being as frightened as everyone else."
Wit smiled, the sphere in his hand lighting his face.
"Funny, isn't it? How so many of our stories start the same way, but have opposing endings?
In half, the child ignores her parents, wanders out into the woods, and gets eaten. In the other half, she discovers great wonders. There aren't many stories about the kids who say, "Yes, I shall not go into the forest. I'm glad my parents explained that is where the monsters lived." "Is that what you're trying to teach me, then?" Shallan snapped. "The fine distinction between choosing for yourself and ignoring good advice? I'm a terrible teacher." He waved his hand as the girl reached the wall after a long hike. She started to climb. "Fortunately, I am an artist, and not a teacher. People learn things from art."
"Blasphemy!
Art is not art if it has a function." Shallan rolled her eyes. "Take this fork," Wit said. He waved his hand. Some of her stormlight split off from her, spinning above his hand and making an image of a floating fork in the darkness. "It has a use. Eating. Now, if it were to be ornamented by a master artisan, would that change its function?" The fork grew intricate embossing in the form of growing leaves. "No, of course not. It has the same use, ornamented or not. The art is the part that serves no purpose."
"It makes me happy, Wit. That's a purpose."
He grinned, and the fork disappeared. "Weren't we in the middle of a story about a girl climbing a wall?" Shallan asked.
"Yes, but that part takes forever," he said. "I'm finding things to occupy us.
We could just skip the boring part."
"Skip?" Wit said, aghast. "Skip part of a story?"
Shallan snapped her fingers, and the illusion shifted so that they stood atop the wall in the darkness. The girl in the scarves finally, after toiling many days, pulled herself up beside them.
"You wound me," Wit said. "What happens next?"
"The girl finds steps," Shallan said. "And the girl realizes that the wall wasn't to keep something in, but to keep her and her people out."
"Because?"
"Because we're monsters." Wit stepped over to Shallan, then quietly folded his arms around her. She trembled, then twisted, burying her face in his shirt.
"You're not a monster, Shallan," Wit whispered. "Oh, child, the world is monstrous at times, and there are those who would have you believe that you are terrible by association."
"I am."
"No, for you see, it flows the other direction. You are not worse for your association with the world, but it is better for its association with you."
She pressed against him, shivering.
"What do I do, Wit?" she whispered. I know I shouldn't be in so much pain.
She took a deep breath.
"I had to kill them. I had to. But now I've said the words and I can't ignore it anymore. So I should just die, too, for having done it."
Wit waved to the side, toward where the girl in the scarves still overlooked a new world. What was that long pack she had set down beside her?
"So you remember?" Wit said gently. "The rest of the story?" "It's not important. We found the moral already. The wall kept people out."
"Why?"
"Because..."
What had she told Pattern before, when she'd been showing him this story?
"Because," Wit said, pointing, "beyond the wall was God's light."
It burst alight in a sudden explosion, a brilliant and powerful brightness that lit the landscape beyond the wall. Shallan gasped as it shone over them. The girl in the scarves gasped in turn and saw the world in all its colors for the first time.
"She climbed down the steps," Shallan whispered, watching the girl run down the steps, scarves streaming behind her. "She hid among the creatures who lived on this side. She sneaked up to the light, and she brought it back with her, to the other side, to the land of shadows."
"Yes, indeed," Wit said, as the scene played out, the girl in the scarves slipping up to the grand source of light,
then breaking off a little piece in her hand. An incredible chase, the girl climbing the steps frantically. A crazed descent, and then light, for the first time in the village, followed by the coming of the storms, boiling over the wall. The people suffered, Wit said, but each storm brought light renewed, for it could never be put back, now that it had been taken. And people, for all their hardship, would never choose to go back, not now that they could see. The illusion faded, leaving the two of them standing in the common room of the building, Muri's little chamber off to the side. Shallan pulled back, ashamed at having wept on his shirt. "Do you wish," Wit asked, "that you could go back to not being able to see?"
"No,"
she whispered. "Then live, and let your failures be part of you."
That sounds an awful lot like a moral, Wit. Like you're trying to do something useful.
Well, as I said, we all fail now and then.
He swept his hands to the sides, as if brushing something away from Shallan. Stormlight curled out from her right and left, swirling, then forming into two identical versions of Shallan. They stood with ruddy hair, mottled faces, and sweeping white coats that belonged to someone else. "Wit," she started.
"Hush."
He walked up to one of the illusions, inspecting it, tapping his chin with his index finger. "A lot has happened to this poor girl, hasn't it? Many people have suffered more and they get along fine."
"Fine?"
Shallan shrugged, unable to banish the truths she'd spoken. The distant memory of singing to her father as she strangled him, the people she'd failed, the problems she'd caused. The illusion of Shallan to the left gasped, then backed up against the wall of the room, shaking her head. She collapsed, head down against her legs, curling up.
"Poor fool," Shallan whispered. "Everything she tries only makes the world worse. She was broken by her father, then broke herself in turn. She's worthless, Wit."
She gritted her teeth, found herself sneering. "It's not really her fault, but she's still worthless." Wit grunted, then pointed at the second illusion, standing behind them. "And that one?" "No different," Shallan said, tiring of this game. She gave the second illusion the same memories. Father, Helleran, failing Jasnah. Everything. The illusory Shallan stiffened, then set her jaw and stood there. "Yes, I see," Wit said, strolling up to her. "No different." "What are you doing to my illusions?" Shallan snapped.
"Nothing. They're the same in every detail."
"Of course they're not," Shallan said, tapping the illusion, feeling it. A sense pulsed through her from it, memories and pain, and something smothering them.
"Forgiveness. For herself."
She gasped, pulling her finger back as if it had been bitten.
"It's terrible," Wit said, stepping up beside her. "To have been hurt. It's unfair and awful and horrid. But Shallan, it's okay to live on."
She shook her head.
"Your other minds take over," he whispered, "because they look so much more appealing. You'll never control them until you're confident in returning to the one who birthed them, until you accept being you."
"Then I'll never control it?"
She blinked tears.
"No,"
Wit said. He nodded toward the version of her still standing up.
"You will, Shallan. If you do not trust yourself, can you trust me? For in you I see a woman more wonderful than any of the lies. I promise you that woman is worth protecting. You are worth protecting."
She nodded toward the illusion of herself still standing.
"I can't be her. She's just another fabrication."
Both illusions vanished.
I see only one woman here, Wit said, and it's the one who is standing up. Shallan, that has always been you. You just have to admit it. Allow it, he whispered to her. It's all right to hurt. He picked up his pack, then unfolded something from inside it. Vale's hat. He pressed the hat into her palm. Shockingly, morning light was shining in the doorway. Had she been here all night, huddled in this hole of a room? Wit? She asked. I can't do it. He smiled. There are certain things I know, Shallan. This is one of them. You can. Find the balance. Accept the pain, but don't accept that you deserved it. Pattern hummed in appreciation of that. But it wasn't as easy as Wit said. She took in a breath and felt a shiver run through her. Wit collected his things, pack over his shoulder. He smiled, then stepped out into the light. Shallan released her breath, feeling foolish. She followed Wit out into the light, emerging into the market, which hadn't quite woken up yet. She didn't see Wit outside, but that was no surprise. He had a way of being where he shouldn't, but not being where you'd expect. Carrying Vale's hat, she walked the street, feeling odd to be herself in trousers and coat. Red hair, but a safe-hand glove. Should she hide? Why? This felt fine. She walked all the way back to the tailor's shop and peeked in. Adolin sat at a table inside, bleary-eyed. He stood upright. Shallan, we were worried. Vatha said you should have come back. He embraced her and she relaxed into him. She felt better. Not well yet, it was all still there, but something about Wit's words, I see only one woman here, the one who is standing up. Adolin still held her for a time, as if he needed to reassure himself. I know you're fine, of course, he said. I mean, you're basically unkillable, right? Finally, he pulled back, still holding her shoulders, and looked down at her outfit. Should she explain? Nice, Adolin said. Shallan, that's sharp. The red on white. He stepped back, nodding. Did Yokska make that for you? Let me see the hat on you. Oh, Adolin, she thought, pulling on the hat. The jacket is a hair too loose, Adolin said, but the style is a really good match. Bold, crisp. He cocked his head. Would look better with a sword at your waist. Maybe... He trailed off. Do you hear that? She turned, frowning. It sounded like marching. A parade? This early? They looked out at the street and found Kaladin approaching along with what seemed to be an army of 500 or 600 men, wearing the uniforms of the Wall Guard. Adolin sighed softly. Of course. He's probably their leader now or something. Storming bridge boy. Kaladin marched his men right up to the front of the tailor's shop. She and Adolin stepped out to meet him, and she heard Elokar scrambling down the steps inside, shouting at what he'd apparently seen out the window. Kaladin was speaking softly with a woman in armor, helm under her arm, face crossed by a pair of scars. High Marshal Azure was younger than Shallan had expected. The soldiers grew hushed as they saw Adolin, then the king, who was already dressed. So that's what you meant, Azure said to Kaladin. Stormblessed? Elokar asked. What is this? You've been wanting an army to attack the palace, your majesty, Kaladin said. Well, we're ready.
83. Crimson to Break. As the duly appointed keepers of the perfect gems, we of the Elsecallers have taken the burden of protecting the ruby nicknamed Honor's Drop. Let it be recorded. from drawer 2010, zircon. Adolin Colin washed his face with a splash of cold water, then rubbed it clean with a wash rag. He was tired. He'd spent much of the night fretting about Shallan's failure to return. Below, in the shop proper, he could hear the others stomping about as they made last-minute preparations for the assault. An assault on the palace, his home for many years. He took a deep breath. Something was wrong. He fidgeted, checking his belt knife, the emergency bandages in his pocket. He checked the glyph ward Shallan had made him at his request, determination, wrapped around his forearm. Then he finally realized what was bothering him. He summoned his shard blade. It was thick at the base, as wide as a man's palm, and the front waved like the ripples of a moving eel. The back had small crystalline protrusions growing out of it. No sheath could hold a weapon like this, and no mortal sword could imitate it, not without growing unusably heavy. You knew a shard blade when you saw one. That was the point. Adolin held the weapon before him in the lavatory, looking at his reflection in the metal. I don't have my mother's necklace, he said, or any of the other traditions I used to follow. I never really needed those. I've only ever needed you. He took a deep breath. I guess you used to be alive. The others say they can hear your screaming if they touch you, that you're dead, yet somehow still in pain. I'm sorry. I can't do anything about that, but thank you. Thank you for assisting me all these years. And if it helps, I'm going to use you to do something good today. I'll try to always use you that way. He felt better as he dismissed the blade. Of course, he carried another weapon, his belt knife, long and thin. A weapon intended for stabbing armored men. It had felt so satisfying to shove it through Sadius's eye. He still didn't know whether to feel ashamed or proud. He sighed, checked himself in the mirror, then made another quick decision. When he walked down the steps to the main room a short time later, he was wearing his Colin uniform. His skin missed the softer silk and better form of the tailored outfit, but he found he walked taller in this one, despite the fact that a part of him, deep down, worried he didn't deserve to bear his father's glyphs any longer. He nodded to Elikar, who was speaking with the strange woman known as High Marshal Azure. My scouts have been driven back, she said, but they saw enough, Your Majesty. The Voidbringer army is here in its strength. They'll attack today or tomorrow for certain. Well, Elikar said, I suppose I understand why you did what you had to in taking control of the guard. I can't very well have you hanged as a usurper. Good work, High Marshal.
I appreciate that.
Shallan, Kaladin, Scar, and Drahi were standing with a palace map. They needed to memorize the layout. Adolin and Elikar, of course, already knew it. Shallan had chosen not to change out of the fetching white outfit she'd been wearing earlier. It would be more functional for an assault than a skirt. Storms, there was something about a woman in trousers and a coat. Elikar left Azure to take reports from some of her men. Nearby in the room, a few light-eyed men saluted him, the High Lords he and Adolin had revealed themselves to the night before. All they'd needed to do was walk away from the spheres powering their illusions, and their true faces had become manifest. Some of these men were opportunists, but many were loyalists. They'd brought some 100 men-at-arms with them, not as many as Kaladin had brought from the Wall Guard, but still Elikar seemed proud of what he had done in gathering them, as well he should. Together, he and Adolin joined the Radiance near the front of the shop. Elikar waved for the High Lords to join them, then spoke firmly. "Is everyone clear?" Elikar asked. "Storm the palace," Kaladin said. "Seize the Sunwalk, cross to the Oathgate platform, hold it while Shallan tries to drive away the Unmade like she did in Yubithiru. Then we activate the Oathgate and bring troops to Kolinar."
"The control building is completely overgrown with that black heart, Your Majesty," Shallan said. "I don't truly know how I drove away the Midnight Mother. And I certainly don't know that I'll be able to do the same here."
"But you're willing to try?" the king asked.
"Yes," she took a deep breath.
Adolin squeezed her on the shoulder reassuringly. Windrunner, the king said, the duty I give you and your men is to get Queen Aesodan and the heir to safety. If the Oath Gate works, we take them that way. If not, you must fly them out of the city. Adolin glanced at the High Lords, who seemed to be taking all of this, the arrival of Knights Radiant, the king's decision to storm his own palace, in stride. He knew little of how they felt. Voidbringers, Everstorm, corrupted Spren in the city? Eventually you stopped being shocked at what happened to you. Are we sure this path across the Sunwalk is the best way? Kaladin asked, pointing at the map Drahi was holding. He moved his finger from the palace's eastern gallery along the Sunwalk onto the Oathgate platform. Adolin nodded.
It's the best way to the Oathgate. Those narrow steps up the outside of that plateau would be murder to storm. Our best chance is to go up the palace's front steps, bring down the doors with our shard blades, and fight through the entryway to the eastern gallery. From there you can go up to the right to reach the king's quarters, or go straight across the Sunwalk.
I don't relish fighting along this corridor, Kaladin said. We have to assume that the Fused will join the battle on the side of the palace guard.
It's possible I can distract them if they do come, Shallan said.
Kaladin grunted and didn't complain further. He saw, as Adolin did, this wasn't going to be an easy fight. There were a lot of choke points the defenders could use. But what else could they do? In the distance, drums began sounding. From the walls. Kaladin looked toward them.
Another raid? One of the High Lords asked.
Worse, Kaladin said, as behind them Azure cursed softly. That's the signal that the city's under attack. Azure pushed out the front doors of the tailor's shop, and the rest of them followed. Most of the 600 men here belonged to the wall guard, and some stepped toward the distant walls, gripping spears and shields.
Steady, men, Azure called. Your Majesty, the bulk of my soldiers are dying on the wall in a hopeless fight. I'm here because Stormblessed convinced me that the only way to help them is to take that palace. So if we're going to do it, the time is now.
We march, then, Elokar said. High Marshal, Bright Lords, pass the word to your forces. Organize ranks. We march on the palace at my command.
Adolin turned as some Fused coursed through the sky along the distant wall. Enemy surge binders. Storms. He shook his head and hurried over to Yokska and her husband. They had watched all this, the arrival of an army on their doorstep, the preparations for an assault, with bewilderment.
If the city holds, Adolin said, you'll be fine. But if it falls, he took a deep breath. Reports from other cities indicate that there won't be wholesale slaughter. The Voidbringers are here to occupy, not exterminate. I'd still suggest you prepare to flee the city and make your way to the Shattered Plains.
The Shattered Plains? Yokska asked, aghast. But, Bright Lord, that's hundreds and hundreds of miles.
I know, he said, wincing. Thank you so much for taking us in. We're going to do what we can to stop this.
Nearby, Elokar approached the timid Ardent who had come with Azure. He had been hurriedly painting glyph wards for the soldiers and jumped as Elokar took him by the shoulder and shoved an object into his hand.
What's this?
The Ardent asked, nervous.
It's a span raid, Elokar said. A half hour after my army marches, you are to contact Urethiru and warn them to get their forces ready to transfer here via the Oath Gate.
I can't use a Fabriel. The Screamers...
Steady, man. The enemy may be too preoccupied by their attack to notice you. But even if they do, you must take the risk. Our armies must be ready. The fate of the city could depend on this.
The Ardent nodded, pale. Adolin joined the troops, calming his nerves by force. Just another battle. He'd been in dozens, if not hundreds, of those. But storms, he was used to empty fields of stone, not streets. Nearby, a small group of guardsmen chatted softly.
We'll be fine, one of them was saying.
He was a shorter man, clean-shaven, though he had strikingly hairy arms.
I tell you, I saw my own death up there on the wall. She streaked toward me, lance held right toward my heart. I looked in those red eyes and I saw myself dying. Then, he was there. He shot from the tower window like an arrow and crashed into the Voidbringer. That spear was meant for my life, and he changed fate, I tell you. I swear he was glowing when he did it.
We're entering an era of gods, Adolin thought.
Elokar raised his shard blade high and gave the command. They marched through the city, passing worried refugees. Rows of buildings with doors shut tight, as if in preparation for a storm. Eventually, the palace rose before the army like an obsidian block. The very stones seemed to have changed color. Adolin summoned his shard blade, and the sight of it seemed to give comfort to the men nearby. Their march took them toward the northern section of the city, near the city wall. Here the fused were visible, attacking the troops. A strange thumping started, and Adolin took it as another set of drums until a head crested the top of the wall nearest them. Storms! It had an enormous stone wedge of a face that reminded him of that of some great shell beast, though its eyes were just red spots glowing from deep within. The monster pulled itself up by one arm. It didn't seem quite as tall as the city walls, but it was still enormous. Fused buzzed about as it swatted along the wall, spraying defenders like kremlings, then smashed a guard tower. Adolin realized that he, along with much of their force, had stopped to stare at the daunting sight. The ground trembled as stones tumbled down a few blocks away, smashing into buildings.
"Keep moving," Azure called. "Storms, they're trying to get in and beat us to the palace."
The monster ripped apart the guard tower, then with a casual flip, tossed a boulder the size of a horse toward them. Adolin gaped, feeling powerless as the rock inexorably hurtled toward him and the troops. Kaladin rose into the air on a streak of light. He hit the stone and rolled with it, twisting and tumbling in the air. His glow diminished severely. The boulder lurched. It somehow changed momentum, tossed away from Kaladin like a pebble flicked off the table. It crested the city wall, narrowly missing the monster that had thrown it. Adolin faintly heard Spren begin to scream, but that was drowned out by the sounds of rock falling and people on the streets shouting. Kaladin renewed himself with Stormlight from his pack. He was carrying most of the gemstones they'd brought from Urethiru, a wealth from the Emerald Reserve to use in their mission and in opening the Oathgate. Drahi rose into the air beside him, then Scar, who had lashed Shallan upward as well. Adolin knew she was basically immortal, but it was still strange to see her here, on the front lines.
"We'll distract the fused,"
Kaladin shouted to Adolin, pointing at a group of figures flying through the air in their direction.
"And, if we can, we'll seize the Sunwalk. Get in through the palace and meet with us in the Eastern Gallery."
They zipped off. In the near distance, the monster started pounding on the gates there, cracking and splintering the wood.
"Forward!"
Azure yelled. Adolin charged, running up beside Elokar and Azure. They reached the palace grounds and surged up the steps. At the top, soldiers in very similar uniforms, black and a darker blue, but still Colin, withdrew, shutting the palace's front doors.
"King's Guard!"
Adolin shouted, pointing at a group of men in red who had been designated as Elokar's honor guard.
"Be sure to watch the king's flanks as he cuts. Don't let the enemy strike at him as the door falls."
Men crowded up the steps, taking positions along the front of the palace's front porch. They held spears, though some were light-eyed. Adolin, Azure, and Elokar each went to a separate door atop the steps. Here, the front of the palace roof, held up by thick columns, shielded them from the stones that the creature was flinging. Teeth gritted, Adolin rammed his blade into the crack between the thick wooden palace door and the wall. He swiped upward quickly, cutting through both hinges and the bar that had been thrown on the inside. After another slice down the other side freed the door, he stepped back into position. It fell inward with a crash. Immediately the enemy soldiers inside rammed spears outward, hoping to catch Adolin. He danced back and didn't dare swing. Wielding a shard blade with one hand was a challenge, even when you didn't have to worry about hitting your own men. He skipped to the side and let the wall guard attack the doorway. Adolin instead moved over beside a group of soldiers who had come with High Lord Yuramil. Here, Adolin cut through a section of the wall, making an improvised doorway that the soldiers shoved open. He moved down the long porch, opening another, then a third. That done, he peeked in on Elokar, who had stepped through his felled door and was now inside the palace. He swept about himself with his blade in a one-handed grip, shield held in the other. He opened a pocket in the enemy soldiers, having killed dozens already.
"Careful, Elokar," Adolin thought. "Remember, you don't have plate."
Adolin pointed at a platoon of soldiers.
"Reinforce the king's guard and make sure he doesn't get overwhelmed. If he does, shout for me."
They saluted, and Adolin stepped back. Asher had cut down her door, but her shard blade wasn't as long as the other two. She was leading a more conservative attack, cutting the ends off spears as they rammed out toward her men. As he watched, she stabbed an enemy soldier who tried to push through. Remarkably, his eyes didn't burn, though his skin did go a strange ashen gray as he died.
"Blood of my fathers," Adolin thought. "What's wrong with her blade?"
Even with all the open doorways, getting into the palace was slow going. The men inside had formed shield wall rings around the doorways, and the fighting mostly happened with men using short spears to stab at each other. Some platoons of wall guard brought in longer pikes to break the ranks of defenders, preparing for a surge.
"You men ever flank-shielded a shard-bearer?"
Adolin said to the nearest squad of soldiers.
"No, sir," said one of the men, "but we've done the training." "It'll have to do," Adolin said, taking his blade in two hands. "I'm going in that center hole. Stay close and keep the spears off my sides. I'll be careful not to catch you in my sweeps." "Yes, sir," their squad leader said.
Adolin took a deep breath, then approached the opening. The interior bristled with spears, like the proverbial white spine's den. At Adolin's instruction, a soldier on his side faced his men and did a countdown with one hand. As the last finger dropped, the soldiers at the doorway fell back. Adolin charged through into the palace entry hall, with its marble floors and high vaulted ceilings. The enemy thrust a dozen spears at him. He ducked low, taking a slice on the shoulder as he did a two-handed sweep, cutting a group of soldiers at the knees. The enemy dropped, their legs ruined by the shard blade. Four men followed him in and raised shields at his sides. Adolin attacked forward, hacking the fronts off spears, cutting at hands.
Storms, the men he fought were too silent.
They'd cry in pain if stabbed or grunt with exertion, but otherwise seemed muted, as if the darkness smothered their emotions. Adolin took his blade in an overhead grip and fell into stone stance, swiping down with precise cuts, felling man after man in a careful, controlled set of strikes. His soldiers protected his flanks while the wide reach of the blade protected his front. Eyes burned. The shield line wavered.
"Fall back 3 steps,
Adolin shouted to his men, then transitioned to wind stance and swept outward with wide flowing sweeps. In the passion and beauty of dueling, he sometimes forgot how terrible a weapon shard blades were. Here, as he rampaged among the faltering line, it was all too obvious. He killed 8 men in a moment and completely destroyed the defensive line.
"Go!"
he shouted, pointing with his blade. Men surged through the doorway and seized the ground just inside the entry hall. Nearby, Elikar stood tall, his narrow shard blade glittering as he called commands. Soldiers fell, dying and cursing, the true sounds of battle, the price of conflict. The enemy finally broke, falling back through the entry hall, which was too large to hold, toward the narrower hallway leading to the eastern gallery.
"Pull out the wounded," Asher called, stepping in. "Seventh Company, hold that far side of the room, make sure they don't try to rush back in. Third Company, sweep the wings and make sure there aren't any surprises."
Curiously, Asher had removed her cloak and wrapped it half around her left arm. Adolin had never seen anything like it. Perhaps she was accustomed to fighting in plate. Adolin got some water, then let a surgeon bandage the shallow cut he'd taken. Though the depths of the palace felt like caverns, this entryway was glorious. Walls of marble, polished and reflective, grand staircases and a bright red rug down the center. He'd burned that as a child once, playing with a candle. Cut bandaged, he joined Azure, Elikar, and several of the High Lords who were studying the wide corridor that led to the Eastern Gallery. The enemy had formed an excellent shield wall here. They'd settled in, and men in the second rank had crossbows ready and waiting.
"That's going to be crimson to break," Azure said. "We'll fight for every inch."
Outside, the crashing at the gate finally grew silent.
"They're in," Adolin guessed. "That breach isn't far from here."
High Lord Shade grunted.
"Maybe our enemies will turn against one another? Can we hope the Voidbringers and the Palace Guard will start fighting each other?"
"No," Elikar said. "The forces that have darkened the palace belong to the enemy who now fights quickly to reach us. They know the danger the Oathgate presents."
"Agreed," Adolin said. "This palace will soon be swarming with Parchment troops."
"Gather your men," Elikar said to the group. "Azure has command of the assault. High Marshal, you must clear this hallway."
One of the High Lords looked at the woman and cleared his throat, but then decided not to say anything. Grim, Azure commanded archers to use short bows to try to soften the enemy. But that shield wall was built to hold out against arrows.
so Azure gave the order and her men advanced against the fortified enemy. Adolin looked away as the corridor became a meat grinder, crossbow bolts smacking against men in waves. The wall guard had shields too, but they had to risk advancing, and a crossbow could punch. Adolin had never been good at this part of battlefield fighting. Stormont, he wanted to be at the front, leading the charge. The rational part of him knew that would be stupid. You didn't risk your shardbearers in such a charge, not unless they had plate.
"Your Majesty," an officer called to Elikar, crossing the entryway, "we found an oddity."
Elikar nodded for Adolin to take care of it, and, glad for the distraction, he jogged over to meet up with the man.
"What?"
"Closed door to the palace garrison," the man said. "Rigged to lock from the outside." Curious. Adolin hiked after the man, passing an improvised triage station, where a couple of surgeons knelt among pain sprens, seeing to men who had been wounded in the initial assault. They'd be far busier once the push down the hallway was finished. To the west of the entryway was the palace garrison, a large housing for soldiers. A group of Azure's men were studying the door, which had indeed been rigged to lock shut from the outside with a metal bar. Judging from the splintered wood, whatever was inside had tried to get out.
"Open it,"
Adolin said, summoning his shard blade. The soldiers cautiously lifted aside the bar, then eased open the door, one holding out some spheres for light. They didn't find monsters, but a group of dirty men in palace guard uniforms. They had gathered at the noise outside, and at seeing Adolin, a few of them fell to their knees, letting out relieved praises to the Almighty.
"Your Highness?"
said a younger Alethi man with captain's knots on his shoulder.
"Oh, Prince Adolin, it is you! Or is this somehow a cruel deception?"
"It's me," Adolin said. "Sidon? Storms, man, I barely recognize you through that beard. What happened?"
"Sir, something's wrong with the Queen. First she killed that Ardent, and then executed Bright Lord Kavis."
He took a deep breath.
"We're traitors, sir."
"She called the guard, sir," another man said. "Locked us in here because we wouldn't obey. Practically forgot about us."
Adolin breathed out a relieved sigh. The fact that the entire guard hadn't simply gone along with her, well, it lifted a burden from his shoulders, one he hadn't realized he'd been carrying.
"We're taking back the palace," Adolin said. "Gather your men, Sidon, and meet up with the surgeons in the main entryway. They'll look you over, get you some water, take your reports."
"Sir,"
Sidon said,
"if you're storming the palace, we want to join you."
Many of the others nodded.
"Join us? You've been locked in here for weeks, men. I don't expect that you're fit for combat."
"Weeks?"
Sidon said.
"Surely it's only been a few days, Bright Lord."
He scratched at a beard that seemed to argue with that sentiment.
"We've only eaten, what, 3 times since being thrown in here?"
Several of the others nodded.
"Take them to the surgeons," Adolin said to the scouts who had fetched him. "But get spears for the ones who claim to be strong enough to hold them. Sidon, your men will be reserves. Don't push yourselves too hard."
Back in the main entryway, Adolin passed a surgeon working on a man in a palace guard uniform. To the surgeons, it didn't matter if you were an enemy. They were helping any who needed their attention. That was fine, but this man stared up with glazed eyes and didn't cry or groan like a wounded man should. He only whispered to himself.
"I know him, too,"
Adolin realized, searching for the name.
"Dodd? That's it. That's what we called him, anyway."
He reported to the king what he'd found. Ahead, Azure's men were making a final push to claim the hallway. They'd left dozens dying, staining the carpet a darker shade of red. Adolin had the distinct sense that he could hear something. Over the din of the fighting, over the shouts of men echoing against the walls, a quiet voice that somehow cut to his soul.
"Passion. Sweet passion."
The palace guard finally relinquished the hallway, retreating through 2 sets of broad double doors at the other end. Those would lead to the eastern gallery. The doors weren't very defensible, but the enemy was obviously trying to buy as much time as possible. Some soldiers cleared bodies out of the way, preparing the way for Adolin and Elikar to cut down the doors. The wood, however, started shaking before they could strike. Adolin backed up, presenting his blade in wind stance by habit, ready to strike at what came through. The door opened, revealing a glowing figure.
"Stormfather," Adolin whispered. Kaladin shone with a powerful brilliance, his eyes beacons of blue, streaming with stormlight. He gripped a glowing metallic spear that was easily 12 feet long. Behind him, Scar and Drahi also glowed brilliantly, looking little like the affable bridgeman who had protected Adolin on the shattered plains.
"The gallery is secure," Kaladin said, stormlight puffing from his lips. "The enemy you pushed back has fled up the steps. Your Majesty, I suggest you send Azure's men onto the Sunwalk to hold it."
Adolin ducked into the eastern gallery, followed by a flood of soldiers, Azure calling commands. Straight ahead was the entrance to the Sunwalk, an open-sided walkway. On it, Adolin was surprised to see not only guard corpses, but 3 prominent bodies in blue. Kaladin, Scar, Drahi.
Illusions?
Works better than fighting them off, Shallan said, stepping up to his side. The flying ones are distracted by the fighting at the city wall, so they left the moment they thought the bridgeman had fallen.
We pushed another force of palace guards back into the monastery first, Kaladin said, pointing. We're going to need an army to scrape them out.
Azure looked to Elikar, who nodded, so she started giving the commands. Shallan clicked her tongue, prodding at Adolin's bandaged shoulder, but he assured her it was nothing serious. The king strode through the gallery, then looked up the broad stairs.
Your Majesty, Kaladin called.
I'm going to lead a force up to the royal chambers, Elikar said. Someone needs to find out what happened to Aes Sedan, what happened to this whole storming city.
The glow faded from Kaladin's eyes, his stormlight running low. His clothing seemed to droop, his feet settling more solidly on the ground. He suddenly seemed a man again, and Adolin found that more relaxing.
I'll go with him, Kaladin said softly to Adolin, handing him the pack of emeralds, after picking out 2 brilliant ones for himself.
Take Scar and Drahi and get Shallan to the Unmade.
Sounds good, Adolin said.
He picked out some soldiers to go with the king. A platoon from the Wall Guard, a handful of the armsmen the High Lords had brought. And, after some thought, he added Sidon and 1/2 a platoon of the men who had been imprisoned in the palace.
Those troops refused the Queen's orders, Adolin said to Elikar, nodding to Sidon. They seem to have resisted the influence of whatever's going on in here, and they'll know the palace better than the Wall Guard.
Excellent, Elikar said, then started up the steps. Don't wait for us. If Brightness Devar is successful, go right to Yuvithiru and bring our armies back.
Adolin nodded, then gave Kaladin a quick salute, tapping his wrists together with hands and fists. The Bridge 4 salute.
Good luck, Bridge Boy.
Kaladin smiled, his silvery spear vanishing as he gave the salute back, then hustled after the king. Adolin jogged over to Shallan, who was staring along the Sunwalk. Azure had claimed it with her soldiers, but hadn't advanced onto the Oathgate platform beyond. Adolin rested his hand on Shallan's shoulder.
They're there, she whispered. 2 of them this time. Last night, Adolin, I had to run. The revel was getting inside my head.
I've heard it, he said, resummoning his blade. We'll face it together, like last time.
Shallan took a deep breath, then summoned Pattern as a shard blade. She held the blade before herself in a common stance.
Good form, Adolin said.
I had a good teacher.
They advanced across the Sunwalk, passing fallen enemy soldiers and a single dead fused pinned to a cleft in the rock by what appeared to be his own lance. Shallan lingered at the corpse, but Adolin pulled her along until they reached the monastery proper. Azure's soldiers advanced at his command, engaging palace guards here to secure a path toward the center. As they waited, Adolin stepped up to the edge of the plateau and surveyed the city. His home. It was falling. The nearest gate had been broken completely open, and parchment flooded through it toward the palace. Others had taken the walls via ladder crews, and those were pushing down into the city at other points, including near the palace gardens. That enormous stone monstrosity moved along the wall on the inside, reaching up and slapping at guard towers. A large group of people in varied costumes had surged down Talon Way, passing along one of the wind blades. The Cult of Moments? He couldn't be certain what part they'd played, but Parshmen were flooding the city in that direction as well.
We can fix this, Adolin thought. We can bring our armies in, hold the palace hill, push back to the walls.
They had dozens of shardbearers. They had Bridge 4 and other surge binders. They could save this city. He just needed to get them here. Soon, Azure approached with a platoon of 30 men.
The pathway inward is secure, though a knot of the enemy still holds the very center. I've spared a few men to scour nearby buildings. It looks like the people you mentioned, the ones who were reveling last night, are slumbering inside. They don't move, even when we prod them.
Adolin nodded, then led the way toward the center of the plateau, Shallan and Azure following. They passed battle lines of Azure's soldiers who were holding the streets. He soon saw the main force of the enemy collected on a path between monastery buildings, barring the way to the Oathgate's control building. Spurred by the urgency of Kolinar's predicament, Adolin took point and swept among the enemy, burning their eyes with his blade. He broke their line, though one straggler almost got in a lucky strike. Scar, fortunately, seemed to appear out of nowhere. The bridgeman caught the blow with his shield, then rammed a spear through the guardsman's chest.
"How many is that I owe you now?" Adolin asked.
"I wouldn't think to keep count, Bright Lord," Scar said with a grin, glowing light puffing from his lips.
Drahi joined them, and they chased the routed enemy past the king's chapel, finally reaching the control building. Adolin had always known it as the Circle of Memories, merely another part of the monastery. As Shallan had warned, it was overgrown with a dark mass that pulsed and throbbed like a pitch-black heart. Dark veins spread from it like roots pulsating in time with the heart.
"Storms," Drahi whispered.
"All right," Shallan said, walking forward.
"Guard this area. I'll see what I can do."
84. The One You Can Save.
The enemy makes another push toward Feverstone Keep. I wish we knew what it was that had them so interested in that area. Could they be intent on capturing Ral Elorim?
From Drawer 19-2, Third Topaz. Kaladin charged up the broad stairs, followed by some 50 soldiers. Stormlight pulsed within him, lending a spring to each step. The fuse had taken time to come attack him on the sunwalk, and it left soon after Shallan had created her ruse. He could only assume that the city assault was consuming the enemy's attention, which meant he might be able to use his powers without drawing immediate reprisal. Elokar led the way, brilliant shard blade carried in a two-handed grip. They twisted around at a landing and charged up another flight. Elokar didn't seem to care that each step took them farther from the bulk of their army.
"Up the stairs," he said softly to Syl. "Check for an ambush on each floor."
"Yes, sir, Commander, sir, Radiant, sir," she said, and zipped off.
A moment later, she zipped back down.
"Lots of men on the third floor, but they're backing away from the stairwell. Doesn't look like an ambush."
Kaladin nodded, then slowed Elokar with a touch on the arm.
"We have a reception waiting," Kaladin said. He pointed at a squad of soldiers.
"It seems the king lost his guards somewhere. You're now them. If we get into combat, keep his majesty from being surrounded."
He pointed at another group.
"You men are... Beard?"
"Yes, Cal,"
the Saki guardsman said. He hesitated, then saluted.
Sir?"
Behind him were Noro, Ved, Alaward, and Vasilev. Kaladin's entire squad from the wall guard. Noro shrugged.
"Without the captain, we don't have a proper platoon leader. Figured we should stick with you."
Beard nodded and rubbed at the glyph ward wrapping his right arm. "Fortune," it read.
"Good to have you," Kaladin said. "Try to keep me from being flanked, but give me space if you can."
"Don't crowd you," Lieutenant Noro said, "and don't let anyone else crowd you either. Can do, sir."
Kaladin looked to the king and nodded. The two of them took the last few steps up to the landing to emerge into a broad stone hallway carpeted down the center but otherwise unornamented. Kaladin had expected the palace to be more lavish, but it appeared that even here, in the seat of their power, the Kolins preferred buildings that felt like bunkers. Funny, after hearing them complain that their fortresses on the shattered plains lacked comfort. Syl was right. A platoon of enemy soldiers had formed up down the hall, holding halberds or crossbows, but seemed content to wait. Kaladin prepared Stormlight. He could paint the walls with a power that would cause crossbow bolts to veer aside in their flight, but it was far from a perfect art. It was the power he understood the least.
"Do you not see me?" Elokar bellowed. "Do you not know your monarch? Are you so far consumed by the touch of the spren that you would kill your own king?"
Storms. Those soldiers barely seemed to be breathing. At first they didn't move, then a few looked backward down the hallway.
Was that a distant voice? The palace soldiers immediately broke formation and retreated. Elikar set his jaw, then led the way after them. Each step made Kaladin more anxious. He didn't have the troops to properly hold their retreat. All he could do was post a pair of men at each intersection, with instructions to yell if they saw someone coming down the cross hallways. They passed a corridor lined with statues of the heralds. 9 of them, at least. One was missing. Kaladin sent Syl ahead to watch, but that left him feeling even more exposed. Everyone but him seemed to know the way, which made sense, but it made him feel carried along on some sort of tide. They finally reached the royal chambers, marked by a broad set of doors, open and inviting. Kaladin stopped his men 30 feet from the opening, near a corridor that split off to the left. Even from here he could see that the chamber beyond the doors finally displayed some of the lavish ornamentation he had expected. Rich carpets, too much furniture, everything covered in embroidery or gilding.
"There are soldiers down that smaller hallway to the left," Syl said, zipping back to him. "There isn't a single one in the room ahead, but... Kaladin? She's in there. The Queen."
"I can hear her," Elikar said. "That's her voice, singing."
"I know that tune," Kaladin thought. Something about her soft song was familiar. He wanted to advise caution, but the king was already hurrying forward, a worried squad of men following. Kaladin sighed, then arranged his remaining men. Half stayed back to watch the retreat, and the other half formed up at the left hallway to stare down the palace guard. Storms! If this went wrong, he'd have a bloodbath on his hands, with the king trapped in the middle. Still, this was why they'd come up here. He followed the queen's song and entered the room.
Shallan stepped up to the dark heart. Even though she hadn't studied human anatomy as much as she'd have liked, her father thought it unfeminine. In the sunlight, she could easily see that it was the wrong shape. "This isn't a human heart," she decided. "Maybe it's a Parshman heart. Or, well, a giant dark violet spren in the shape of one growing over the Oathgate control building." "Shallan," Adolin said, "we're running out of time." His voice brought to her an awareness of the city around her, of soldiers skirmishing only one street over, of distant drums going quiet, one at a time, as guard posts on the wall fell, of smoke in the air, and a soft, high-pitched roar that seemed the echoes of thousands upon thousands of people shouting in the chaos of a city being conquered. She tried pattern first, stabbing him into the heart as a shard blade. The mass simply split around the blade. She slashed with it, and the spren cut, then sealed up behind. So, time to try what she'd done in Urethiru. Trembling, Shallan closed her eyes and pressed her hand against the heart. It felt real, like warm flesh. Like in Urethiru, touching the thing let her sense it, feel it, know it. It tried to sweep her away.
The queen sat at a vanity beside the wall. She was much as Kaladin had anticipated, younger than Elikar, with long dark Alethi hair, which she was combing. Her song had fallen away to a hum.
"Eh, Sudan?" Elikar asked.
She looked away from the mirror, then smiled broadly. She had a narrow face with prim lips painted a deep red. She rose from the seat and glided to him.
"Husband, so it was you, I heard. You have returned at last, victorious over our enemies, your father avenged?"
"Yes," Elikar said, frowning. He moved a step toward her, but Kaladin grabbed him by the shoulder and held him back. The queen focused on Kaladin.
"New bodyguard, dear one? Far too scruffy. You should have consulted me. You have an image to maintain." "Where is Gav, Aes Sedain? Where is my son?" "He's playing with friends."
Elikar looked to Kaladin and gestured to the side with his chin. "See what you can find," it seemed to say.
"Keep alert,"
Kaladin whispered, then began picking through the room. He passed the remnants of lavish meals, only partially eaten. Pieces of fruit, each with a single bite taken out of them.
cakes and pastries, candied meats on sticks. It looked like it should have rotted, based on the decay sprain he noticed, but it hadn't.
"Dear one," Elokar said, keeping his distance from the queen, "we heard that the city has seen trouble lately. One of my Ardens tried to refound the hierarchy. We really should keep better watch on who joins them. Not every man or woman is proper for service."
"You had her executed?"
"Of course. She tried to overthrow us."
Kaladin picked around a pile of musical instruments of the finest wood, sitting in a heap. "Here," Syl's voice said in his mind, "across the room, behind the dressing screen." He passed the balcony to his left. If he remembered right, though the story had been told so often he had heard a dozen differing versions, Gavilar and the assassin had fallen off that ledge during their struggles.
"Aes Sedain,"
Elokar said, his voice pained. He stepped forward, extending his hand.
"You're not well. Please, come with me."
"Not well?"
"There's an evil influence in the palace."
"Evil? Husband, what a fool you are at times."
Kaladin joined Syl and glanced behind the dressing screen, which had been pushed back against the wall to section off a small cubby. Here a child, 2 or 3 years old, huddled and trembled, clutching a stuffed soldier. Several Spren, with soft red glows, were picking at him like kremlings at a corpse. The boy tried to turn his head, and the Spren pulled on the back of his hair until he looked up, while others hovered in front of his face and took horrific shapes, like horses with melting faces. Kaladin reacted with swift, immediate rage. He growled, seizing the Syl blade from the air, forming a small dagger from mist. He drove the dagger forward and caught one of the Spren, pinning it to the wall's wooden paneling. He had never known a shard blade to cut a Spren before, but this worked. The thing screamed in a soft voice, 100 hands coming from its shape and scraping at the blade, at the wall, until it seemed to rip into 1,000 tiny pieces, then faded. The other 3 red Spren streaked away in a panic. In his hands, Kaladin felt Syl tremble, then groan softly. He released her, and she took the shape of a small woman.
That was terrible,
she whispered, floating over to land on his shoulder.
Did we just kill a Spren?
The thing deserved it, Kaladin said. Syl just huddled on his shoulder, wrapping her arms around herself. The child sniffled. He was dressed in a little uniform. Kaladin glanced back at the king and queen. He'd lost track of their conversation, but they spoke in hissing, furious tones.
"Oh, Elokar," the queen was saying, "you were ever so oblivious. Your father had grand plans, but you, all you ever wanted to do was sit in his shadow. It was for the best that you went off to play war.
So you could stay here and do this?" Elokar said, waving toward the palace.
"I continued your father's work. I found the secret, Elokar. Spren. Ancient Spren. You can bond with them."
"Bond?"
Elokar's mouth worked as if he couldn't understand the very word he spoke.
"Have you seen my radiance?"
Aes Sedain asked. She grinned.
"The Queen's Guard? I've done what your father could not. Oh, he found one of the ancient Spren, but he could never discover how to bond it. But I have solved the riddle."
In the dim light of the royal chambers, Aes Sedain's eyes glittered, then started to glow a deep red.
"Storms,"
Elokar said, stepping back.
"Time to go."
Kaladin reached down to try to pick up the child, but the boy screamed and scrambled away from him. That finally drew the king's attention. Elokar rushed over, throwing aside the dressing screen. He gasped, then knelt beside his son. The child, Gavinor, scooted away from his father, crying. Kaladin looked back to the queen.
"How long have you been planning this?"
"Planning for my husband's return?"
"I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the thing beyond you."
She laughed.
"Yelignar serves me. Or do you speak of the heart of the revel? A Shirtmarn has no will. He is merely a force of consumption, mindless, to be harnessed."
Elikar whispered something to his son. Kaladin couldn't hear the words, but the child stopped weeping. He looked up, blinked away tears, and finally let his father pick him up. Elikar cradled the child, who in turn clutched his stuffed soldier. It wore blue armor.
"Out," Kaladin said.
"But,"
the king looked toward his wife. "Elikar," Kaladin said, gripping the king's shoulder,
"be a hero to the one you can save."
The king met his eyes, then nodded, clutching the young child. He started toward the door, and Kaladin followed, keeping his eyes on the queen. She sighed loudly, stepping after them.
"I feared this."
They rejoined their soldiers, then began to retreat down the hallway. Aesodan stopped in the doorway to the king's chambers.
"I have outgrown you, Elikar. I have taken the gemstone into me, and have harnessed Yelignar's power."
Something started to twist around her, a black smoke blown as if from an unseen wind.
"Double time,"
Kaladin said to his men, drawing in Stormlight. He could feel it coming. He'd sensed where this would go the moment they'd started up the steps. It was almost a relief when, at last, Aesodan shouted for her soldiers to attack.
"Give it all to me," the voices whispered in Shallan's mind. "Give me your passion, your hunger, your longing, your loss. Surrender it. You are what you feel." Shallan swam in it, lost, like in the depths of the ocean. The voices beset her from all sides. When one whispered that she was pain, Shallan became a weeping girl, singing as she twisted a chain tight around a thick neck. When another whispered that she was hunger, she became an urchin on the street, wearing rags for clothing. Passion, fear, enthusiasm, boredom, hatred, lust. She became a new person with every heartbeat. The voices seemed thrilled by this. They assaulted her, growing to a frenzy. Shallan was 1,000 people in a moment. But which one was her? All of them. A new voice. "Wits? Wit!" she screamed, surrounded by snapping eels in a dark place. "Wit! Please! You're all of them, Shallan. Why must you be only one emotion, one set of sensations, one role, one life? They rule me, Wit! Vale and Radiant and all the others. They're consuming me! Then be ruled as a king is ruled by his subjects. Make Shallan so strong the others must bow. I don't know if I can." The darkness thrummed and surged, and then withdrew. Shallan didn't feel as if she'd changed anything, but still the darkness retreated. She found herself kneeling on the cold stones outside the control building. The enormous heart became sludge, then melted away, almost seeming to crawl, sending out runners of dark liquid before itself. "You did it," Adolin said.
"I did?"
"Secure that building," Azure commanded her soldiers. Drey and Scar glowed nearby, looking grim, fresh blood on their clothing. They'd been fighting. Shallan stood up on shaky feet. The small circular structure in front of her seemed insignificant compared to the other monastery buildings, but it was the key to everything.
"This is going to be tricky, Azure," Adolin said. "We're going to have to fight back down into the city, push the enemy out. Storms, I hope my father has our armies ready."
Shallan blinked, dazed. She couldn't help feeling she'd failed, that she hadn't done anything.
"The first transfer will only be the control building," Adolin said. "After that, she'll swap the entire platform, buildings and all. We'll want to move our army back into the palace before that happens."
Adolin turned, surveying the path back.
"What is taking the king so long?"
Shallan stepped into the control building. It looked much as the one she'd discovered at the Shattered Plains, though better maintained, and its tile mosaics on the floor were of fanciful creatures. An enormous beast with claws and fur like a mink. Something that looked like a giant fish. On the walls, lanterns shone with gemstones, and between them hung full-length mirrors. Shallan walked toward the keyhole control device, summoning Pattern as a blade. She studied him,
then looked up at herself in one of the mirrors hanging on the wall. Someone else stood in the mirror, a woman with black hair that fell to her waist. She wore archaic clothing, a sleeveless flowing gown that was more of a tunic, with a simple belted waist. Shallan touched her face. Why had she put this illusion on? The reflection didn't mimic her motions, but pressed forward, raising hands against the glass. The reflected room faded and the figure distorted and became a jet-black shadow with white holes for eyes. Radiant, the thing said, mouthing the words. My name is Ja'anat, and I am not your enemy.
Kaladin's men charged down the steps in their escape, though the back ranks bunched up in the hallway around the stairwell. Behind, the queen's guards set up and lowered crossbows. Still spear held high, Kaladin stepped between the two groups and pulled Stormlight into the ground, drawing the bolts downward. He was unpracticed with this power, and unfortunately some of the bolts still slammed into shields, even heads. Kaladin growled, then drew in a deep breath of Stormlight, bursting alight, the glow of his skin shining on the walls and ceiling of the palace hallway. The queen's soldiers shied back before the light as if it were something physical. Distantly, he heard the screaming Spren react to what he'd done. He lashed himself in precisely the right way to rise a few feet off the ground, then float there. The queen's soldiers blinked against the light as if it were somehow too strong for their eyes. At last, the captain of the rear guard called the final withdrawal, and the rest of Kaladin's men rushed down the stairs. Only Noro's squad lingered. Some of the queen's soldiers began to test forward at him, so he dropped to the floor and started down the steps at a run. Beard and the rest of the squad joined him, followed by the queen's soldiers, unnaturally silent. Unfortunately, Kaladin heard something else echoing up the stairwell from down below, the sounds of men clashing and a familiar singing. Parshendi songs.
Rear guard, Kaladin shouted. Form up on the steps. Orient toward the upper floor.
His soldiers obeyed, turning and leveling spears and shields at the descending enemy. Kaladin lashed himself upward and twisted so that he hit the ceiling feet first. He ducked and ran, passing over the heads of his men in the high stairwell, until he reached the ground floor. The first ranks of his soldiers clashed with Parshman troops in the eastern gallery, but the enemy had penned them into the stairwell so most of his troops couldn't get down to fight. Kaladin released his lashing, dropping and twisting to land in a tempest of light before the Parshman ranks. Several of his men groaned and cried as they fell, bloodied, to the enemy's spears. Kaladin felt his rage flare, and he lowered the Sill spear. It was time to begin the work of death. Then he saw the face of the Parshman in front of him. It was Sar, former slave, card player, father. Kaladin's friend.
Shallan regarded the figure in the mirror. It had spoken. What are you? They call me the Taker of Secrets, the figure said. Or they once did. One of the unmade, our enemies. We were made, then unmade, she agreed. But no, not an enemy. The figure turned human-like again, though the eyes remained glowing white. It pressed its hands against the glass. Ask my son, please. You're of him, Odium. The figure glanced to the sides, as if frightened. No, I am of me, now only of me. Shallan considered, then looked at the keyhole. By using pattern in that, she could initiate the oath gate. Don't do it, Ja'anat pled. Listen, Radiant. Listen to my plea. Ashert Marn fled on purpose. It is a trap. I was compelled to touch the spren of this device, so it will not function as you wish.
Kaladin's will to fight evaporated. He'd been stoked with energy, ready to enter the battle and protect his men, but... Saw recognized him and gasped, then grabbed his companion, Ken, one of the others Kaladin knew, and pointed. The Parsh woman cursed, and the group of them scrambled away from the steps, leaving dead human soldiers. In the opening provided, Kaladin's men pushed down off the steps into the grand hall. They surged around Kaladin as, stunned, he lowered his spear. The large pillared hall became a scene of utter chaos. Azure's soldiers rushed in from the sunwalk, meeting the Parshman who came up the stairs from the back of the palace. They'd likely broken in through the gardens there. The king held his son, standing amid a group of soldiers in the very center. Kaladin's men managed to get down off the steps, and behind them rushed the queen's guard. It all turned into a melee. Battle lines disintegrated and platoons shattered, men fighting alone or in pairs. It was a battlefield commander's nightmare. Hundreds of men mixing and screaming and fighting and dying. Kaladin saw them. All of them. Saw and the Parshmen, fighting to keep their freedom. The guardsmen who had been rescued, fighting for their king. Azure's wall guard, terrified as their city fell around them. The queen's guard, convinced they were loyally following orders. In that moment, Kaladin lost something precious. He'd always been able to trick himself into seeing a battle as us against them. Protect those you love. Kill everyone else. But they didn't deserve death. None of them did. He locked up. He froze. Something that hadn't happened to him since his first days in Amaram's army. The seal spear vanished in his fingers, puffing to mist. How could he fight? How could he kill people who were just doing the best they could?
Stop! He finally bellowed. Stop it! Stop killing each other!
Nearby, Saw rammed Beard through with a spear.
Stop! Please!
Noro responded by running through Jolly, one of the other Parshmen Kaladin had known. Ahead, Elokar's ring of guards fell, and a member of the Queen's Guard managed to ram the point of a halberd into the king's arm. Elokar gasped, dropping his shard blade from pained fingers, holding his son close with his other arm. The Queen's Guardsman pulled back, eyes widening as if seeing the king for the first time. One of Azure's soldiers cut the guardsman down in his moment of confusion. Kaladin screamed, tears streaming from his eyes. He begged them to just stop, to listen. They couldn't hear him. Saw, gentle Saw, who had only wanted to protect his daughter, died by Noro's sword. Noro, in turn, got his head split by Hen's axe. Noro and Saw fell beside Beard, whose dead eyes stared sightlessly, his arm stretched out, cliff wards soaking up his blood. Kaladin slumped to his knees. His stormlight seemed to frighten off the enemies. Everyone stayed away from him. Syl spun around him, begging for him to listen, but he couldn't hear her.
The king, he thought, numb. Get to Elokar.
Elokar had fallen to his knees. In one arm he held his terrified son, in the other hand he held a sheet of paper? A sketch? Kaladin could almost hear Elokar stuttering the words.
Life. Life before death.
The hair on Kaladin's neck rose. Elokar started to glow softly.
Strength before weakness.
Do it, Elokar,
Kaladin whispered.
Journey. Journey before.
A figure emerged from the battle. A tall, lean man, so familiar. Gloom seemed to cling to Moash, who wore a brown uniform like the Parshmen. For a heartbeat, the battle pivoted on him. Wall guard behind him, broken palace guard before.
Moash. No,
Kaladin whispered. He couldn't move. Stormlight bled from him, leaving him empty, exhausted. Lowering his spear, Moash ran Elokar through the chest. Kaladin screamed. Moash pinned the king to the ground, shoving aside the weeping child prince with his foot. He placed his boot against Elokar's throat, holding him down, then pulled the spear out and stabbed Elokar through the eye as well. He held the weapon in place, carefully waiting until the fledgling glow around the king faded and flickered out. The king's shard blade appeared from mist and clanged to the ground beside him. Elokar, king of Alethkar, was dead. Moash pulled the spear free and glanced at the shard blade. Then he kicked it aside. He looked at Kaladin, then quietly made the Bridge Four salute, wrists tapped together. The spear he held dripped with Elokar's blood. The battle broke. Kaladin's men had been all but obliterated. The remnants escaped along the sunwalk. A member of the Queen's Guard scooped up the young prince and carried him away. Azure's men limped back before the growing Parshmen armies. The Queen descended the stairs, wreathed in black smoke, eyes glowing red. She'd transformed, strange crystal formations having pierced her skin like carapace. Her chest was glowing bright with a gemstone, as if it had replaced her heart. It shone through her dress. Kaladin turned from her and crawled toward the king's corpse. Nearby, a member of the Queen's Guard finally took notice of him, seizing him by the arm. And then, light.
Glowing stormlight flooded the chamber as twin radiance exploded out from the sunwalk. Drahi and Scar swept through the enemy, driving them back with sweeping spears and lashings. A second later, Adolin grabbed Kaladin under the arms and heaved him backward.
Time to go, bridge boy.
85. Grieve later. Don't tell anyone. I can't say it. I must whisper. I foresaw this. From drawer 3020, a particularly small emerald. Adolin shoved down the emotion of seeing Elokar's dead body. It was one of the first battlefield lessons his father had taught him. Grieve later. Adolin pulled Kaladin out along the sunwalk while Scar and Drahi guarded their retreat, encouraging the last of the wall guard to run, or limp, to safety. Kaladin stumbled along. Though he didn't appear wounded, he stared with a glazed-over look. Those were the eyes of a man who bore the kinds of wounds you couldn't fix with bandages. They eventually poured out of the sunwalk onto the Oathgate platform, where Azure's soldiers held firm, her surgeons running to help the wounded who had escaped the bloodbath in the eastern gallery. Scar and Drahi dropped down to the platform, guarding the way onto the sunwalk to prevent the Queen's Guard or Parshman from following. Adolin stumbled to a stop. From this vantage, he could see the city. Stormfather. Tens of thousands of Parshmen flooded in through the broken gates or across the nearby sections of wall. Figures glowing with dark light zipped through the air. Those seemed to be gathering in formations nearby, perhaps for an assault on the Oathgate platform. Adolin took it all in and admitted the terrible truth. His city was lost.
All forces, hold the platform, he heard himself saying. But pass the word. I'm going to take us to Yubithiru.
Sir, a soldier said. Civilians are crowding the base of the platform trying to get up the steps.
Let them, Adolin shouted. Get as many people up here as you can. Hold against any enemy who tries to reach the platform top, but don't engage them if they don't press. We're abandoning the city. Anyone not on the platform in 10 minutes will be left behind.
Adolin hurried toward the control building. Kaladin followed, dazed. After what he's been through, Adolin thought, I wouldn't have expected that anything could faze him. Not even Elokar's storms. Grieve later. Azure stood guard in the doorway to the control building, holding the pack full of gemstones. Hopefully, those would be enough to get everyone to safety. Brightness Devar told me to clear everyone else out, the High Marshal said. Something's wrong with the device. Adolin cursed under his breath and stepped inside. Shallan knelt on the ground before a mirror, looking at herself. Behind, Kaladin stepped in, then settled down on the floor, placing his back to the wall.
Shallan, Adolin said, we need to go. Now.
But
the city has fallen. Transfer the entire platform, not just the control building. We need to get as many people as we can to safety.
My men on the wall, Azure said.
They're dead or routed, Adolin said, gritting his teeth. I don't like it any more than you do. The king is dead. The queen has joined the enemy. I'm ordering our retreat, Azure.
Adolin locked gazes with the woman.
We gain nothing by dying here.
She drew her lips to a line, but didn't argue further.
Adolin, Shallan whispered, the heart was a trick. I didn't chase it off. It left on purpose. I think the Voidbringers intentionally left Kaladin and his men alone after only a brief fight. They let us come here because the Oathgate is trapped.
How do you know? Adolin asked.
Shallan cocked her head.
I'm speaking to her.
Her?
Ja'anat, the taker of secrets. She says that if we engage, the device will be caught in a disaster.
Adolin took a deep breath.
Do it anyway, he said.
Do it anyway. Shallan understood the implication. How could they trust an ancient spren of odium? Perhaps Shallan really had driven the Black Heart away, and, in a panic to keep the humans from escaping, Ja'anat was now stalling. Shallan looked away from the pleading figure in the mirror. The others couldn't see her. She'd confirmed this with Azure already.
Pattern, she whispered.
What do you think?
He said quietly. Lies. So many lies. I don't know, Shallan. I cannot tell you.
Kaladin slumped by the wall, staring sightlessly as if he were dead inside. She couldn't recall ever seeing him in such a state. Get ready. Shallan stood up, summoning Pattern as a blade.
Trust is not mine, said the figure in the mirror. You will not give my children a home.
Not yet. Shallan pushed the blade into the lock. It melded to match Pattern's shape.
I will show you, Ja'anat said. I will try. My promise is not strong, for I cannot know. But I will try.
Try what? Shallan asked.
Try not to kill you.
With those words haunting her, Shallan engaged the Oath Gate.
86. That Others May Stand. My spren claims that recording this will be good for me, so here I go. Everyone says I will swear the fourth ideal soon, and in so doing earn my armor. I simply don't think that I can. Am I not supposed to want to help people? From Drawer 1012, Sapphire. Dalinar Kholin stood at attention, hands behind his back, one wrist gripping the other. He could see so far from his balcony at Urethiru, but it was endless miles of nothing. Clouds and rock. So much and so little all at once.
Dalinar,
Nivani said, stepping up and resting her hands on his arm.
Please, at least come inside.
They thought he was sick. They thought his collapse on the Oathgate platform had been caused by heart troubles or fatigue. The surgeons had suggested rest. But if he stopped standing up straight, if he let it bow him down, he worried the memories would crush him. The memories of what he'd done at the rift. The crying voices of children begging for mercy. He forced his emotions down. What news? He said, embarrassed by how his voice trembled.
None,
Navani said.
Dalinar.
Word had come from Kholinar via Spanreed, one that somehow still worked. An assault on the palace, an attempt to reach the Oathgate. Outside, the gathered Kholin, Aladar, and Royon armies clogged one of Urethiru's Oathgate platforms, waiting to be taken to Kholinar to join the battle. But nothing happened. Time seeped away. It had been 4 hours since the first communication. Dalinar closed his mouth, eyes ahead, and stared at the expanse. At attention, like a soldier. That was how he would wait, even though he'd never really been a soldier. He'd commanded men, ordered recruits to stand in line, inspected ranks. But he himself? He'd skipped all of that. He'd waged war in a bloodthirsty riot, not a careful formation. Nivani sighed, patting him on the arm, then returned to their rooms to sit with Taravangian and a small collection of scribes and high princes, awaiting news from Kholinar. Dalinar stood in the breeze, wishing he could empty his mind, rid himself of memories, go back to being able to pretend he was a good man. Problem was, he'd given in to a kind of fancy, one everyone told about him. They said the Blackthorn had been a terror on the battlefield, but still honest. Dalinar Kholin, he would fight you fair, they said. Evie's cries and the tears of murdered children spoke the truth.
Oh, almighty above.
How could he live with this pain? So fresh, restored anew. But why pray? There was no almighty watching. If there had been, and if he'd had a shred of justice to him, honor would have long ago purged this world of the fraud that was Dalinar Kholin.
And I had the gall to condemn Amaram for killing one squad of men to gain a shardblade.
Dalinar had burned an entire city for less. Thousands upon thousands of people.
Why did you bond me?
Delinar whispered to the Stormfather.
Shouldn't you have picked a man who was just? Just? Justice is what you brought to those people. That was not justice. That was a massacre.
The Stormfather rumbled.
I have burned and broken cities myself. I can see. Yes, I see a difference now. I see pain now. I did not see it before the bond.
Would Delinar lose his bond now, in exchange for making the Stormfather increasingly aware of human morality? Why had these cursed memories returned? Couldn't he have continued for a little longer without them? Long enough to forge the coalition? To prepare the defense of humankind? That was the coward's route, wishing for ignorance. The coward's route he'd obviously taken. Though he could not yet remember his visit to the Night Watcher, he knew what he'd asked for. Relief from this awful burden. The ability to lie, to pretend he had not done such horrible things. He turned away and walked back into his rooms. He didn't know how he'd face this, bear this burden, but today he needed to focus on the salvation of Kolinar. Unfortunately, he couldn't make battle plans until he knew more about the city's situation. He entered the common room where the core of his government had gathered. Navani and the others sat on some couches around the span reed, waiting. They'd laid out battle maps of Kolinar, talked over strategies, but then hours had passed with no news. It felt so frustrating to just sit here, ignorant. And it left Delinar with too much time to think, to remember. Instead of sitting with the others, Taravangian had taken his normal place, a seat before the warming fabrial in the corner. Legs aching and back stiff, Delinar walked over and finally let himself sit, groaning softly as he took the seat beside Taravangian. Before them, a bright red ruby glowed with heat, replacing a fire with something safer but far more lifeless.
"I'm sorry, Delinar," Taravangian finally said. "I'm sure news will come soon."
Delinar nodded.
"Thank you for what you did when the Azish came to tour the tower."
The Azish had arrived yesterday for an initial tour, but Delinar had been recovering from the sudden return of his memories. Well, truth was, he was still recovering. He'd welcomed them, then retired as Taravangian had offered to lead the tour. Navani said the Azish dignitaries had all been charmed by the elderly king, and planned to return soon for a more in-depth meeting about the possibility of a coalition. Delinar leaned forward, staring at the heating fabrial. Behind, Aladar and General Kahl conversed, for probably the 100th time, on how to recover the Kolinar walls if they were lost by the time the Oathgate started working.
"Have you ever come to the sudden realization," Delinar said softly, "that you're not the man everyone thinks you are?"
"Yes," Taravangian whispered. "More daunting, however, are similar moments, when I realize I'm not the man I think of myself as being."
Stormlight swirled in the ruby, churning, trapped, imprisoned.
"We spoke once," Delinar said, "of a leader forced to either hang an innocent man or free three murderers."
"I remember."
"How does one live after making a decision like that? Particularly if you eventually discover you made the wrong choice."
"This is a sacrifice, isn't it?"
Taravangian said softly.
"Someone must bear the responsibility. Someone must be dragged down by it, ruined by it. Someone must stain their soul so others may live."
"But you're a good king, Taravangian. You didn't murder your way to your throne."
"Does it matter? One wrongly imprisoned man? One murder in an alley that a proper policing force could have stopped? The burden for the blood of those wronged must rest somewhere. I am the sacrifice. We, Delinar Kolin, are the sacrifices. Society offers us up to trudge through dirty water so others may be clean."
He closed his eyes.
Someone has to fall, that others may stand.
The words were similar to things Dalinar had said and thought for years, yet Taravangian's version was somehow twisted, lacking hope or life. Dalinar leaned forward, stiff, feeling old. The two didn't speak for a long period until the others started to stir. Dalinar stood, anxious. The Spanreed was writing. Navani gasped, safe hand to her lips. Teshub turned pale, and May Aladar sat back in her seat, looking sick. The Spanreed cut off abruptly and dropped to the page, rolling as it landed.
What? Dalinar demanded. What does it say?
Navani looked to him, then glanced away. Dalinar shared a look with General Khal, then Aladar. Dread settled on Dalinar like a cloak.
Blood of my fathers.
What does it say?
He pled.
The capital has fallen, Dalinar,
Navani whispered.
The Ardent reports that Voidbringer forces have seized the palace. He cut off after only a few sentences. It looks like they found him and...
She squeezed her eyes shut.
The team you sent, Teshub continued, has apparently failed, Bright Lord.
She swallowed.
The remnants of the Wall Guard have been captured and imprisoned. The city has fallen. There is no word on the King, Prince Adolin, or the Radiance. Bright Lord, the message cuts off there.
Dalinar sank back down into his chair.
Almighty above,
Taravangian whispered, gray eyes reflecting the glow of the heating fabrial.
I am so, so sorry, Dalinar.
87. This place.
Good night, dear Uathiru. Good night, sweet sibling. Good night, Radiance.
From drawer 2929. Ruby. The Oathgate's control building shook like it had been hit by a boulder. Adolin stumbled, then fell to his knees. The shaking was followed by a distinct ripping sound and a blinding flash of light. His stomach lurched. He fell through the air. Shallan screamed somewhere nearby. Adolin struck a hard surface and the impact was so jarring that he rolled to the side. That caused him to tumble off the edge of a white stone platform. He fell into something that gave way beneath him. Water? No, it didn't feel right. He twisted in it, not a liquid, but beads. Thousands upon thousands of glass beads, each smaller than a stormlight sphere. Adolin thrashed, panicked as he sank. He was dying. He was going to die and suffocate in this sea of endless beads. Someone caught his hand. Azure pulled him up and helped him back onto the platform, beads rolling from his clothing. He coughed, feeling that he had been drowning, though he'd gotten only a few beads in his mouth.
Stormfather,
he groaned, looking around. The sky overhead was wrong. Pitch black, it was streaked with strange clouds that seemed to stretch forever into the distance, like roads in the sky. They led toward a small, distant sun. The ocean of beads extended in every direction, and tiny lights hovered above them, thousands upon thousands, like candle flames. Shallan stepped over, kneeling beside him. Nearby, Kaladin was standing up, shaking himself. This circular stone platform was like an island in the ocean of beads, roughly where the control building had been. Hovering in the air were two enormous spren. They looked like stretched-out versions of people, and stood some 30 feet tall like sentinels. One was pitch black in coloring, the other red. He thought them statues at first, but their clothing rippled in the air and they shifted, one turning eyes down to look at him.
Oh, this is bad, someone said nearby. So very, very bad.
Adolin looked and found the speaker to be a creature in a stiff black costume with a robe that seemed somehow to be made of stone. In place of its head was a shifting, changing ball of lines, angles, and impossible dimensions. Adolin jumped to his feet, scrambling back. He almost collided with a young woman with blue-white skin, pale as snow, wearing a filmy dress that rippled in the wind. Another spren stood beside her, with ashen brown features that seemed to be made of tight cords, the thickness of hair. She wore ragged clothing, and her eyes had been scratched out, like a canvas that someone had taken a knife to. Adolin looked around, counting them. Nobody else was here on the landing. Those two enormous spren in the sky, and the three smaller ones on the platform. Adolin, Shallan, Kaladin, and Azure. It seemed the Oathgate had only taken those who had been inside the control building. But where had it taken them? Azure looked up at the sky. "Damnation," she said softly. "I hate this place." The end of part 3.
Interludes. Venli, Mem, Sheeler. Interlude 7. Envoy. Odium's grand purpose for Venli meant turning her into a showpiece. "Then the humans waged a war of extermination against us," she told the assembled crowd. "My sister tried to negotiate, to explain that we had no blame for the assassination of their king. They would not listen. They saw us only as slaves to be dominated.